planet's puppet masters almost surely have a plan. There's clearly maybe something there beyond the realm of man. And until you've thoroughly tested every last close just in view, I find the more you think you know, the less you really do.
That's true, Dr. Zaius.
Very well.
Where would we be without THC? Cause we know they're lying to us, just don't know.
How's it going, Higher Side Chatters? Drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke, and trying to soak up that sweet, sweet eclipse energy today from sunny San Diego. I'm your humble host, Greg Carlwood, Oath Keeper, Breaker of Chains, and the Unburnt to boot. Now, longtime listeners know that for years now, we've been checking in with Ole Demengard anytime we have a big cluster of terror events, to use a neutral term. And I think he's found so many inconsistencies with the reporting and oddities about the events themselves that you really have to have blinders on to dismiss all of it. And last week I recorded a show with Ole where we got into most of the main events we've had in the first half of the year. The Ariana Grande concert, these cars that are being driven into crowds, the Grenfell Tower fire. And as always, I think he brings a lot of things to the table that should make you scratch your head a bit. But in the few short days since recording this interview, we've had this big clash in Charlottesville, and then of course we had another vehicle in the crowd attack in Barcelona. So I caught Ole on Skype and I said, hey man, is there anything you want to add about recent events to the show we recorded before it goes out? And he actually had a lot to say about those recent events already. So what we have here is a typical Higher Side Chats episode, but at the end you'll also have another half hour that's tacked on, which discusses the events of the last week. I'll also probably upload it to YouTube separately as well, but either way, it's a bit of a barn burner. We call it the Stage Terror Events Extravaganza of 2017, with the man who knows the plan, Ole Demengard. Enjoy!
Back in park it, tune in and spark it, cause Greg's about to open up your mind. Armed with information about the secret manipulation and the wisest aficionados he can find. And he's pulling back the curtain on what we thought we knew for certain, so we can see the world with a brand new set of eyes. You're listening to The Higher Side.
All right, Higher Side Chatters, ever since the disastrous day we call 9/11, many of us have seen the obvious issues with how these so-called terror attacks are presented to us. And I know my faith in the media sources of spin has never been restored. In fact, it seems the biggest factor in the continuation of the never-ending war on terror has been the reoccurring motif of the crazed radical preying on a random unsuspecting crowd. But how accurate is that picture really? Have we actually been witnessing a long string of random events set off by religious extremists, or has the lie of 9/11 spawned a hydra of false flags largely built to support each other and perpetuate a worldview that seems increasingly forced and flimsy that tries to drill into the masses that none of us are truly safe? Meanwhile, the military-industrial complex makes billions, the empire expands, the media props up the boogeyman, and people around the globe surrender their rights and freedoms for the false promise of safety from an enemy cooked up by their very protectors. Well, folks, we've done more than a few shows dissecting the inconsistencies of these events, and since they keep happening, we have to keep digging deeper. And one of my favorite researchers working in this realm is the author of the book Coup d'etat in Slow Motion and the man behind the amazing website that catalogs it all, lightonconspiracies.com, the great Ole Demengard. He was here once to talk about the history of rockstar assassinations, which covered the seemingly suspicious deaths of Jimi Hendrix, John Lennon, Bob Marley, and even Whitney Houston. And then we had him back twice more to talk about the caravan of crisis actors on their global terror tour. Because as Ole's research has shown, it seems that in many of these events that are presented as mass murders through the media, we find more than a few elements of stagecraft, from events recurring on cryptic dates to the so-called parents of slaughtered children caught smiling and laughing before their media interviews. So here to pick apart the latest string of false flags, sham shootings, and bogus bombings is the man himself, all the way from Spain. Ole, my man, welcome back to The Higher Side.
Thank you so much, Greg. And congratulations with your marriage here.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, man. Thank you. And it is great to have you back. It has been too long. And in previous shows, we've talked about events in Aurora, Boston, Paris, Copenhagen, Sydney, Ottawa, Sandy Hook, San Bernardino, and several others. I mean, there's just so many of these things. And in the last 18 months or so since we've done this, we've had no shortage of similar events. And it seems like three or four times you've actually been able to predict the next event by looking at the cryptic clues they leave, which is amazing. And I guess to get us going here, let me start by asking you, how has this campaign evolved over the last year and a half? How have you gotten better at analyzing it? What are you seeing?
I'm seeing that it's been taking off in a speed and amplitude that is just ridiculous. I want to start out with saying that it's extremely important to see each event separate. This is a crime scene. Something happened, but what? You really need to dig very deep into all the details, all the evidence, and so on before you jump into any conclusions, or I would say to avoid jumping into any conclusion, because it's like, I've spent some 30 years doing this, and I find that it's only the facts that are important. It is only the truth that matters. It's not to prove my own so-called theory or anything like that. The only thing that can help the world is what is going on and who is doing it to us. So just like you said, extremely important to find out, are we either in a world filled with crazy Muslim terrorists waking up screaming Allah Akbar and then planting bombs everywhere, or is there something totally different going on? And over the years, I started, because in the beginning, I had no idea. I had no idea that anything of this was connected in any way or form, including many of these top assassinations we've looked into together, like with JFK, Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, and so on. I had no idea. But then over the years, I found more and more very strong links between these things. And it's come to a point since, I think, about 2014, where I found out that they have to leave clues for the next upcoming event. And the reason for that is, from insiders I have from inside the New World Order, that the way they interpret the law of karma is that if they tell us what they're up to, even in subtle forms or in media or in films, but hidden there, but still tell us, and we do not act or react, then that karma is on our shoulders, not theirs. And they are terrified of that, you know, to get the whole on their shoulders. I think it's a very twisted way of seeing the law of karma. I think there's no way that they will get away once it's time to knock on the pearly gates or wherever it is. You know, you do, and it comes back to you.
Right.
So once I started seeing that they are actually doing that, they are actually leaving clues in the evidence. From that moment on, I've been just so deep into every single one of these events, digging, trying to find out, where is it? I know it's here somewhere. I know it is. And after that, I've been able to publicly predict, I think, about four international radio where I pointed out the exact location and the most probable time, and many times I hit spot on, bullseye, and another four, five, six, I don't know how many other ones that also I predicted and that came up, but some all I predicted that did not happen. And then you can ask yourself, did I make a mistake, or was it because there was a lot of exposure around this thing that had made them have to shut it down? And, you know, like, I'm a friend with CIA whistleblower Chip Tatum. He was part of false flags in his career as well. And I've got confirmation from him several times. And what he says is every single time we stop these kind of operations, the timeline is so tight and so detailed. So it's very important for these dark forces that every single part of these operations goes through so that they can then come in with their solution or follow up operations and so on. So every time we mess it up for them or stop one, it can mess it up for months down the line.
Right. That is a great point. And, you know, I definitely want to get into those clues and patterns you've been dissecting, but also one element that I think is super interesting that you were telling me about on Skype is that you seem to have found a major player in the global terror tour with this company, Crisis Solutions, They have some pretty incriminating statements and content on their website, even, it seems. Can you tell us a little bit about them?
I would prefer to wait a little bit, but then again, I'll be happy to do it. It was after the Westminster Bridge attack, where there was, as you know, in these so-called false flag operations, one of the main ingredients is the drill. There's always a drill before the real event goes live. And that drill is there for these actors, or whatever you want to call them, to get vehicles in positions, explosives in positions, cameras, crisis actors, directors, all of it's like a moving film set that they're actually doing. Where I don't call these things a terror attack. I call them a media event where the product is terror. The product is fear, to pump it out through mainstream media, which they control to a large extent, so that the population will be totally terrified, thus accepting and even welcoming more and more control, more and more Robocops, more and more CCTV cameras, more and more body scanners in airports, train stations, you name it, and also justifying these incredible, horrific wars that are being started based on these alleged terror attacks that never took place. But that, yet again, you have to look at each and every single event, because sometimes, even though it's a so-called false flag operation, there can be real victims, but there are also many times only crisis actors, or it can be a mixture of both. One of the things that, after all of these years, a while ago, this company, Crisis Solutions, popped up on my radar. And when I started looking into that, I just got goosebumps everywhere, because I felt, oh my God, this is the head of the octopus in the operational part on a street level. If I am correct, on their website, they even have, it's crisis-solutions.com. They're based in the UK, in England, with headquarters in London. But when you go there, there are no signs on the walls. There are no, you know, like you can't press any buttons. There's no logos. There's nothing. I've had people on location there. And the people that work, it's only like a four or five people team itself, maybe eight, with very, very suspicious backgrounds into military intelligence and a lot of these things that are needed for security, yes, but also if you want to pull these things off to create terror so that all of very brutal solutions will be welcomed. And you can go on their website, and I think it's under products or something like that. You can go, and it's called Crisis Cloud. And in that video, it's a very type of video with, you know, like there's some animations going on. When you look at these animations, it's actually 666 that is sort of rotating into each other. And then what they say is, when did you last have a crisis simulation? They call it crisis simulations with players. And now we at Crisis Solutions, we have now taken this to a whole new level, shoveling A4 papers and using telephones. And so that is out of the window. We don't use that anymore. Now it's high tech. And so they present what they call Crisis Cloud. And in this video, they show exactly how it's done. There are different units. There are like the tactical teams on the street level. These tactical units are like SWAT teams, police, ambulances, firefighters, these type of things, crisis actors on a street level. And please keep in mind, just because somebody looks like a firefighter does not mean that he is actually one. You know, it's just a uniform. Just because somebody got a SWAT team uniform does not mean that they're actually SWAT team members from that country. Just because somebody's got a police uniform on, just because somebody's driving an ambulance. When you start tracking down these vehicles, often these vehicles are rented from private companies, then used in these operations. So there's the tactical teams. Then I think there's what they call the C unit, where that is more, you know, like the people from the heads of different companies, the heads of security, where they sit and brainstorm. And then you've got another unit the different units, all of them are connected into this, what they call crisis cloud, which is online, and where they say that the only thing you need as a player is to have internet access. So people can sit on the Bahamas with a big cigar and a laptop and be part of carrying out these so-called crisis simulations that are identical to these alleged terror attacks. And then what they do is also they have a unit in the middle that in live time can change and update these whole things so that if anything occurs, if somebody like myself try to stop it or interfere, they can redirect in live time. And what they also have is information part of the whole thing with a live feed into live media. They deliver live news for TV and others. I mean, in these simulations, I wonder who these type of TV news are aimed at. I would suggest us. They've got Twitter feeds in the hundreds, Facebook things in the hundreds that are all connected to this. So there are whole units sitting there when these simulations go on, are sitting there spreading all of this disinformation, whatever, on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, to TV news, where they've got crews that are putting together fake news as part of the simulation being pumped out there. And what they say, they brag about it in this video, they say now we can even do multiple simulations at the same time. You don't even have to be in the same country. So they given us example, they get Edinburgh in Scotland where there was a drill, then Manchester where there was an attack later, and then New York City where we have the Times Square attack also. These three at the same time, you know, at the same time, three different attacks or more at the same time, and they can coordinate the whole thing. So I tell you, this is what we're up against.
Right.
There's another page on that, their websites. I think it's under clients, testimonials. And there's this, I don't know who it is, who's writing a story about how it was so exciting. They were up in this high-rising building with a fantastic view over London. I think it's the Millbank Tower, where I would say some part of the attack, the Westminster Bridge attack, the first London attack on the 22nd of March this year, which I predicted 1 month before it happened with the exact spot, the Parliament, Big Ben. Anyway, he says that they were standing up there looking over this. There was this tension in the air, you know, because it was the biggest simulation that they've ever had taken place of. And he says there were people from 80 corporations present. That's 80 corporations present in the room overlooking this whole thing.
Wow.
And then it was carried out, and afterwards everybody was cheering and applauding, and oh my God, we did it. You know, simulation. I tell you, what is actually there is a description of them in that tower watching that operation at the London Bridge. Because also they were the ones who carried out the drill on the River Thames 3 days before this happened, with the same vessel that was then part of the rescue search for a woman that had been thrown off the bridge and so on.
Wow. Man, so that is a lot to digest. Of course, people should take a look at crisis-solutions.com. And to get a little deeper into the actual events, obviously we can't cover everything that's happened since the last time we talked, because there's just been so many events. But if we were to look harder at the attack in Manchester on May 22nd of this year at the Ariana Grande concert, I know this is one you've talked about a lot, but it has quite a few clues surrounding it that kind of suggest it was a simulation, right?
Can I just jump back and say about crisis solutions? When I went out and pointed them out, I mean, this is a bit scary for someone like me. I'm a one-man band, you know, to put a pointing, accusing finger at something like that. I mean, they could just sue me from here to the moon. I went out on a program called SGT Report, and in 2 weeks, that interview had some 280,000 views. So there was a massive exposure suddenly looking at that, and their website just disappeared from the internet. It just disappeared. So I went out on other programs and said, is this normal for the, I mean, this is a super website, you know, a big company. They would have it up on the air, boom, like this, if it was a technical issue. So wouldn't you say that this could possibly show signs of like a criminal mind that just want to hide what they're doing and disappear? So I pointed people to a cached version on the internet. I spread the link everywhere saying you can download and see their website here, even though it's shut down. And also there's the video, everything. So download it, save it, and spread it everywhere. Mm. Then after 2 days after I pointed saying, look, they're trying to hide, boom, it's back there up again. So I don't know. I'm just saying I think that there's some, I would hope and believe that there's a whole lot of truth involved in what I'm saying about this company. Right. And that company, I believe, is also connected with Crisis Cast in the US, which it was the company that had a drill very close to the Pulse Club, the mass shooting in Orlando. I also believe that their connection with this company to another company called NC4 and another British company called Bell Pottinger. So I think what we're looking at are, you know, like when you study the CIA, for instance, you will see that there are hundreds and hundreds of front companies intertangled into this web. So it makes it very hard to get a grip of what are you looking at. And also they shut down companies, open up new ones, rename them, and so on. So it's at all times changing. And here I think that I believe that I found a thread into the head of the Octopus on the operational party of what I call the Global Tour of Terror. Because if I'm correct after all of these years, and I think I got a quite good,
track record, yeah.
Track record, since I have been able to predict these things. Because how can I, just an ordinary guy, predict terror attacks? I mean, that's ridiculous. And if I can, wouldn't it be a natural thing for the security police or forces of these different countries where this happens, where I'm able to point it out before it happens, to contact me and say, either you must be involved in this, or how the hell did you, how could you tell? But there's always silence, 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 silence. The reason? Because they're totally involved.
Mm-hmm.
So please also notice that all of the countries, more or less, where these things happen are members of NATO. And it's around and round in circles like a teddy bear. The same countries, the same cities, the same police districts again and again and again and again. And also the dates, they love these dates, you know, so they repeat the same dates again and again and again for different reasons.
Right. Like often the 22nd and often March 22nd, which of course 322 is that famous Skull and Bones number.
Yeah.
Who knows if it's connected, but that date definitely does pop up more than a few times.
Oh, that is a real, I mean, it's just a matter of where, you know, many times I say the next one is going to be on, for instance, the 22nd of May. Like you say, they love the 22nd of different months. And it's just a matter of sitting, waiting. Okay, so where is it going to blow up? I said 2 days before the Manchester attack, because it is also the 22nd of May, that is more or less exactly 1 week before the Bilderberg meeting, which is extremely important in this agenda. So every year before the meeting that keeps changing locations all over the world, in the Western world, they have a distraction. Media is starting to say, ooh, is it really true that these old guys are sitting smoking cigars and planning for the New World Order? Could that be true? So there's this focus starting to aim at this group that should have been exposed 50 years ago, if you ask me. Anyway, so what they do is they pull something off over to the left. The whole attention is just changed in that direction, wherever that is. So 2 days before the Manchester, I said, within the next few days, there's going to be another one to distract from the Bilderberg meeting. 2 days later, boom, in Manchester this time.
Right. At that concert.
At that concert. And I would like to point out also that it's not that I've been able to predict, like, this is going to happen in England. This is going to happen in England. This is going to happen in England. This is international. This whole thing of where we see, oh, terrorism is everywhere. No. what I believe is happening, and I'm getting it confirmed from more and more sources, is that what we're looking at is like a rock group on tour, like the Rocky Horror Show, a small little unit that is with the exact same demands, more or less, as a rock band on tour or a theater group on tour, but like a film set, a mobile film set unit with everything from marketing agencies, directors, pyrotechnics, you know, experts in explosives, smoke bombs, crisis actors, amputee actors, catering, the whole shebang. Exactly like if you want to do a Coca-Cola ad and you do an international shoot where you go from country to country. Here, this product is terror. That's the thing. They need to keep us fearful for us to accept their agenda.
Right.
So when they leave these clues, the clues is for the next upcoming, or now they've started to put clues for multiple targets. I think this is very recent, the last 6 months or so, where the clues are pointing in more than one direction. So this is why, for instance, the whole, if you remember the Berlin truck attack, and then there was a mass shooting in a nightclub in Istanbul, then there was another one in Jerusalem, a truck attack there. Then you had the Fort Lauderdale shooting. Then you had the Melbourne car attack, and so on and so on. Also, I want to come back to why there's so many vehicles involved, because that's part of the agenda as well here now. So the theme, they have different themes. They have different color codes, and they got secret, almost like a secret language involved in these operations, so that members of their light-fearing group all over the world can see, aha, this is our operation. They don't need to know the details. They just know, aha, this is one of ours.
Right.
That's one of ours, and so on.
Right. So how do we know, like, for example, that Manchester Ariana Grande concert bombing was one of their events? Because this is one that I got a lot of pushback from people who were like, there's no way this was a false flag attack. There's no way this was a simulation. But yet, it actually seems more like one than a lot of others based on the clues that you've dissected.
That one is very, very difficult, because it is just like you say, how can you or I say that a whole stadium, I mean, it officially was sold out, 21,000 people in there. How can you say that it didn't happen? Because, I mean, 21,000 witnesses would say the same thing. And how could they do that with like 22 victims? Are you saying that this is fake, that these deaths are not real? What I can say is that if you had had 21,000 fans in there, teenage girls with their favorite pop star on stage, wouldn't you think that more than three or four of them would have a cell phone with a camera? Don't you think any of them would start filming if something just blew up and people were lying dead all over? I mean, they take photos of a hamburger and put on Facebook. You know, don't you think one of the most traumatic things in their life, that someone would have taken photos? Don't you think that the CCTV cameras that are there all over the place in this very modern, it's one of the biggest, if not the biggest arenas in Europe, would have security cameras? Of course they have, because when you've got big football games or soccer games or whatever, if there's panic or a fire, or the security company, which this event, it's a company called Showsec, they need to have control and see what's going on. You know, if one exit is blocked or whatever, they need to be able to see the whole thing so that they can redirect and get people out safely. Here, no CCTV cameras. The parking lots outside were more or less empty. The footage that is in there where they say, well, look at this. I mean, that you can really say, you can't see anything. There's no panic as such. There are people in the stadium. Yes. There are people leaving the stadium. Yes. There's a person on stage saying, no panic. Just take it easy. If everybody could just please leave the building, with an American accent as well. And there's nothing of the photo from the crime scene. There's one photo of the alleged crime scene. Nothing where you can see that this guy blew himself up. And they couldn't pinpoint where he blew himself up. There were three different locations before they finally agreed on, no, it was there. That's where it happened. And the people that were hurt there are men in their 50s.
Right. No teenage girls.
I would say, where are all the teenage girls? Then you have outside. You always, when there are these false flags, you always have high quality photos that are being spread, showing victims that are being led around or lying there. As soon as the police is involved, super high quality. Then as soon as there's something where the guy or individual that they blame it on, there's this CCTV camera footage or whatever, super blurred, or photos. It will always be the same, that this Islamic terrorist, he will have like a bandana and a cap on, and he's moving, so it's blurry. And you can't see his face, you can't see anything, you can't see the background. All of that, that is really important as evidence. You will never see that. So here outside the stadium in Manchester, we see there's like a handful of photos taken by a photographer called Joel Goodman. And they're super quality, but it's not like 24,000 people in absolute panic running around. Is they're walking around, sitting, chilling, drinking water, and so on. Also, there's a few videos where you see parents running around looking for their child, especially one, a man who's running around, you know, shouting out for his daughter. But he's filming himself, his own face, while he's running around. Would you do that if you were in total panic? Would you film yourself while running around looking for your daughter? And it's like, Ellen, you know.
Pretty strange.
And then, like I said, when there are these rock concerts and so on, I mean, all the parking spaces in that whole part of town or the city will be occupied, packed here. Totally calm, they're half empty. You got the police, ambulances. Where are the photos of all the dead? Where are the photos of all the wounded? Where are they? Where are all the different press photographers? Where are all the people of these 21,000 outside the stadium taking photos as well? Nothing. That's nothing. Then the firefighters in Manchester, as soon as they heard of it that very night, just minutes after it happened, or allegedly happened, they were on their way to help, of course. And they were told, stand down. You're not allowed to get close to this area. Stand down. This is also standard procedure in these operations, where normal, decent people want to come and help. But they are not allowed to interfere because it's a totally different operation in the center. Normal police and military will be put in the outer parameters of where this happened to close off street, keep traffic out, keep us out, you know, because normal people are not allowed to be too nosy and see, whoa, what's actually happening here? Then also, so was there a drill? Yes, there was a drill 1 year before in a mall just a stone's throw away. Very similar. It was actually a mass shooting. And the guy that took the photos at the drill was the same photographer that is there responsible for all the high quality photos now.
Yeah, that's incredibly unlikely.
Also, when you see the English Queen after all of these attacks in England, which, by the way, please keep in mind how close these things were to the British elections and also the whole Brexit thing in the UK. I mean, it was just a few days before the referendum and election as well. So major, major political tension in this country. And then boom, 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 these things happen. Okay. So the Queen went to the hospital to shake hands with the victims, teenage girls. And there's all of these footage where she walks around with these girls and they're in bed, in hospital beds, but they're dressed in civilian clothes underneath the blanket. I don't know. I mean, last time I went to a hospital, even if I had sort of like a splint in my toe, I had to undress and put on these awful clothes, hospital clothes, you know. But here they are in their own civilian clothes, all of them, lying in different beds. Also, the queen walks around shaking hands with the staff, and two of the nurses says, well, we had an exercise a month ago, and now this just went like clockwork. So what exercise and why did it go like clockwork? You know, so you really have to question this thing. Then also photos of people, you know, like these people surrounding outside the stadium and so on, also in the early morning hours, they're walking around with suitcases on wheels and stuff like that. I mean, if you go to a rock concert, would you bring a suitcase? And there are multiple of these suitcases. Also, some researchers have said that with facial recognition that there's more than one of these alleged crisis actors that have been taking part of Sandy Hook and others. There's also a very strange one. Do you remember there was a just 1 week before the Orlando shooting, which was also right before the Brexit referendum in the UK. And the Brexit referendum was about, should England leave the European Union or stay? Should they become sort of stay out or join the European Union?
Right.
That is what Brexit is about. And so this internet sensation singer, Christine Grimmie, I think she was in The Voice, and she had a concert just a few days before the Pulse shooting happened. It was in Orlando, Florida as well. And the band was called Before You Exit Brexit. You know, anyway.
Right.
So what she did was she had a concert there and she was just about to go out and sign some autographs for her fans when she sent her last Twitter, because she was gunned down right after that officially. And the Twitter message she said sent out was, shoot me down, bang, bang, shoot me down, bang, bang, shoot me down, bang, bang. And then she went out and was shot down with three shots.
Wow.
And once again, no footage, no, they cut the videos exactly when, you know, crap, all of it crap. Then the whole funeral thing, people were laughing in the background at the funeral, you know, this duping delight. I totally questioned that whole thing. And it was right before the Brexit. Then you had the stabbing of Joe Cox, an MP in England, just 2 days before also the Brexit election, you know, to get the emotions going. They were trying to force the UK to stay in Europe, you know.
Right.
So anyway, so we had it the exact same thing in Sweden when 2 days before, when there was a referendum in Sweden about the euro as a currency, if Sweden should keep their old krona or join the euro. And these forces that were, what I'm talking about, the same force behind all of these, what is called the New World Order, they try to force the Swedish population to join the euro. But Sweden didn't want it. So they tried with all type of propaganda, didn't want it. So what they did was instead they stabbed the Swedish foreign minister, a woman, almost in an identical assassination as the Joe Cox murder in England, where she was stabbed in a supermarket very brutally. And she was the icon for the euro. So people in Sweden was like, oh my God, that is so horrible. That is so horrible. So even if they were against the euro before the killing, then now out of sympathy for her family and so on, they voted pro the euro. So they almost got Sweden to vote for the euro. Didn't go all the way. Anyway, so there are this thing of, if you can't, you know, use logic to get a population to vote the way you want, then you go emotional. And it's always women and children. That's the way to get the emotions going.
Right.
Kill them and you will get your way.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so there was this shoot me down, bang, bang. But before the Manchester thing, one of the victims in that was a girl called Calendar. And she tweeted just before this happened, I miss you so much, Ariana. Can't wait to see you on the Danger Woman tour. It's going to kill me. And then right before she died, she sent a text message, a tweet. Kill me, kill me, kill me. Please tell me they're coming to Manchester. You know, shoot me down three times. Kill me, kill me, kill me. What is that? These type of bizarre, where these satanic undertones that are very obvious once you start looking into these things become very clear.
Right.
And then that is a very, very strange, also this victim, this young girl, Calendar, because her mother at the funeral, it seems like it's the same individual that is the daughter is now the mother, but with a fat suit. I kid you not. I kid you not. This woman, she's like a big blonde wig, and she's got this leopard top on and jeans. And when her husband or partner is hugging her at the funeral, when he touches her back, the whole back is moving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like a normal body where the hand, even if you're sort of overweight, your arm would just sort of like move into the body flesh or whatever, or fat tissue. But here the whole, it moves. So I'm telling you, I truly believe that is not a real death, and that funeral not real. And also one of the things that you will see many, many times in the UK when these type of things happen is that the news footage from funerals, from press conferences and so on, it's a company called ITN Productions. It's not ITN News, it's ITN Productions. And their specialty is like daylight soap operas and theater shows and so on. So I tell you, what are we looking at? Are we looking at theater here as well? This is what I would suggest.
Wasn't also, I think I heard you mention that Ariana Grande's manager actually met with Netanyahu a few weeks before, which is a little suspicious if that really occurred.
I've got photos from that meeting. His name is Scooter, and he's a Jewish man who, he was a manager for Justin Bieber, for Ariana Grande. And please also remember that one of Ariana Grande's so-called friends is Nicki Minaj, who was right at the Westminster Bridge the day before the alleged terror attack on the 22nd of March, where they shot her video called No Fraud on the exact spot where two of the victims are said to have been killed. And she was standing with the Big Ben in the background, waving an English flag, postcards right in the background. This exact same postcards that the very next day, I mean, within less than 24 hours, are lying spread around one of the victims.
Wow.
Also, when you look at these artists' videos and you see what people they've signed up with, how the whole music scene has been totally hijacked nowadays by the same very dark force, and how these videos are pumped with Freemasonic messages and symbols, and it's a very sad thing to see. So here we have this with Ariana Grande, I mean, a beautiful young singer, but at the memorial, there were a concert where she was singing for the victims, and she talks about this calendar girl and says, she asked me to sing this hit. And when she says hit, she just breaks out laughing. I mean, not like a little. She has to hold her mouth because she is like, what is that?
Yeah.
What is that?
Man.
I mean, it should be the exact opposite thing. You've had a concert. And the thing was, it didn't happen when she had just gone off stage, they say, and then boom, this thing happened.
Damn.
You know? And then there was one young gay guy who was killed officially, and his parents, when you see interviews with him, his name was Martin Heft, when you see interview with his parents, they're sitting smiling. They're saying, oh, he always wanted to be famous, and now finally he made it. You know, oh, we're so happy for our son and son. Their son was officially blown up with a nail bomb like a few days before. Would you sit and smile and talk about how lucky he is to finally be famous?
I would not.
I mean, what is that?
Right. Time is just going by so quickly. I mean, there's so much to talk about with each of these events, but I guess it was a license plate detail at the Manchester event in the footage there that led you to the next event?
Yeah. But first, I just want to say, how could they pull it off if it was fake? Because often you have, like, in the drill, that's where they film all the footage that is then used as live footage, you know, so that they can control and get everything correct with rehearsing and everything. And then once it's there, all the good quality photos is there, then that is being pumped out as live footage. when the news goes live and so on. But how could they do this? I would say nowadays when you have a rock concert, most tickets are sold online. And so they say, okay, at 12 o'clock, we will release these tickets. And so within half an hour or 2 hours, boom. I mean, many times it's sold out. So what really happened? Is it possible that the people in charge of this whole thing, what they did was they just said, okay, we're going to release all the tickets at 12 o'clock. And at 12 o'clock, they just made the phone lines busy for like an hour or two and then said, oh, sorry, now it's all sold out. And that way we would think, oh, there's 21,000 inside, but actually maybe it was totally empty. And people are saying, but how can you say this? How can it's awful. And I agree. The last thing I want is to disrespect anyone that has been hurt by this. But you have to question, because we're just scraping on the surface now. And I've said to so many, please, if you were there, if you have someone, if you know someone, or if you were there and got injured, please contact me. I have looked into so many of these terror attacks in Paris and Denmark and Sweden. I've been on location on most of them with undercover footage. I've said everywhere, please contact me. No one has contacted me. It's always, well, my brother's sister's uncle was there, or I have a friend I work with, his daughter was there. But to get in direct touch, to this day, I have not been able to. So also, one of the guys that they help out, you know, you had all of these young victims, but the photos are often of old guys. And one of the guys that they bring out looks like a former military guy. So I looked into it, and I tell you, this guy's name, as far as if I'm correct, is Paul Campion. And he's a former SAS, Special Forces. And right after this, he was then appearing in media, in TV stations, being interviewed, not as a victim, but as an expert on that attack in Manchester and on the London Bridge attack in London. And also he's been appearing about ISIS. So I would suggest they're using the same small little unit again and again. So the thing you asked about is that, since I know that they need to leave clues, I looked everywhere. And one of the things that I found weird was this photo of the LS victims, where all of them are middle-aged guys lying around on the floor. And on the floor, there are like two lines that looks like blood, but parallel lines. So it's like, that was strange. So I just noted it, because I've checked everything. And I tried to look into all the details, put notes on everything. No. And then on the 3rd of June, we had an additional attack. It's the London Bridge attack happened. Okay. So at the London Bridge attack, it said that there was this van with Muslims that drove up and down. And then they decided, no, we're going to kill some people. So they drove up, killed some people with a van on the pavements and so on, then jump out of the van, ran around with knives, stabbed multiple people. They were into multiple different pubs, then ran out. The police arrived, and all three of these alleged terrorists were shot dead on the spot. 50 shots fired, they claim, the most ever in England, and all three dead, not a single drop of blood, nothing. And all of it done in 8 minutes, from the first person was hit by the van to all of that around, to multiple pops, multiple stabbings, all of that, and then until the minute they were shot dead. So very efficient police, I must say, if you believe it. Anyway, so when they were filming this, one of the things I always look for is like when there's news footage or something, and maybe they're standing filming right into a wall, you know, where there's a sign or something, just for like 20 seconds, and then they move the camera to the reporter or something. I always question, why are they filming that? What is the reason? And if something happens and the camera is on before it happens, that tells you that person is in on it. They knew it was going to happen. Why would they have the camera on if they weren't expecting something? You know, so these are the things I look for, and that is sometimes where I find a clue. And on the London Bridge attack, the camera in the night, it was just panning across this dark bridge. There was a police officer, and then there was a mini, a small English car, black with two red stripes over it. So I thought, whoa. And the camera sort of stopped for a little while, paused, filming the car right in the center of the footage, and then moved on. So I was like, whoa, hang on. And it reminded me of these two red stripes, because that is how they do it, you know, these subtle signs and so on. So also the thing was that the number plates was KE11NXT. So I thought NXT in my world, that means next. Mm-hmm. So KE11, I was like, what does that mean? K, is it KE2? Is 11, is that 2? Key to next. You know, this car is the key to the next. So I went out on Facebook saying, please, this might be a clue. Please try and see if you can decode it together with me. So there were all of these suggestions and so on. And also I tracked down the car. Turned out that this car had changed number plates 4 times in just a few years, and not to some cool name like Mr. Cool or something like, no, totally ordinary number plates. Why would they change that 4 times in just a few years? And it was also registered very close to one of the film companies in London. So I thought, that car, we need to look into it. So I was trying to figure it out, and boom, then happened the so-called Grenfell and the Grenfell Tower fire in London, where massive fire, this high tower building went up in a flame that, I mean, the fire spread in seconds, in minutes. The whole tower was just one massive, big, like a gas flame, you know. It didn't follow any normal logic when it comes to how this fire was spreading. And then I found out that that tower was in Kensington, postcode 11. So KE11 next, you know.
Wow.
So anyway, that fire, bizarre fire, very, very strange fire. And it was almost like they changed the game plan, because it was, instead of the normal way they do this, here was almost like they were putting like an ambush for people like myself. Because one of the things they did was they were, for one thing, they were interviewing all of these witnesses. And once again, no tears, no shaking, no being pale and in shock, even though people were talking about horrific stuff, like babies being thrown out from windows and their friends and families being burnt to death. I mean, I'm a former journalist, so I've been to these kind of locations. When things like that happen, people, they don't make sense. People are running around screaming, you know, totally out of their head. When you speak to them, they can't put together sentences, or they're shaking, or they're totally pale, or they're sweaty, or they're totally quiet, and so on. But here we see once again, very calmly, well, and then these people burn in. And officially, that building lodged some 500 to 600 people. But there were no people out in the streets in the pajamas, even though it started in the evening, late evening. You know, there were no children running around. There was no people with like black in their face, nothing like that. And also the flames, the way the building just went up in flames was just incredible. And this is where they interviewed a young rapper, and he seemed really trustworthy. I totally bought it to start with. Because he said that, oh my God, it's not an accident. Because here they were given loads of money to fix up these buildings. There were the several tower blocks there, and they haven't done anything. The only thing they've done is change the cladding on the outside into some plastic thing. And that is why this fire went so, so fast. Okay. So he said also the elevators, they didn't work, and it would have cost 60,000 to fix them. They were giving like £1 million or more, and they didn't do anything of this. So this is arson. So what happened after that was that suddenly, the last time I checked, there was about 190 similar towers in the UK alone, where the fire authority says there's the same fire hazard in that tower building. There's the same there. There's the same there. There's the same there. So suddenly, you have what I would call ethnic cleansing. They're getting rid of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. Most of the time, from minority, you know, from all over the world, poor people, lots of, you know, like unemployed and so on. And these buildings are often in areas that is where property prices are just skyrocketing. So what better way to clean that whole thing out by saying, for your security, we will deport you. So now they're shipping all of these poor people up to the north of England, up to Manchester, Leicester, up north, hundreds of kilometers, also forcing them to take the train down to work for peanuts up and down, several hundred kilometers up and down every day, while they can then rebuild these towers, but into super luxury apartments.
Right. And there's the insurance angle as well.
They are going to get paid out. I'm not sure if it's paid out yet, but it's the highest ever in the UK. They changed the insurance a few months before this happened, and it's going to be the biggest payout ever in the UK. I wouldn't say for sure the number, but it is very, very high. But then also you had the gas pipes on the outsides of the walls. Normally you build them in for security. In these buildings, they were on the outside. And for years, people have been complaining, saying this is a fire trap, you know. And also there are people testifying, saying that the gas entry, sort of the entry pipes into the buildings were messed with. So when you look at the flames, the speed of that whole thing, that is a gas fire. That is not just a tower fire. You know, they say that it was a fridge that exploded. Fair enough. Fridges can explode. But then you would have one fire in one apartment, and then possibly that could spread to the next apartment, maybe on top. And that, if you didn't manage to turn it out, would then spread to the next one. But we're talking like concrete buildings and stuff. Here, like a flamethrower just woof. And then you had a fire drill just a few days before this happened, where the fire authorities came and said, if there is a fire, for your own safety, just lock yourself in your apartment. I mean, that is sort of like a death trap.
Right, right.
Then we started having questions around, where are the 500 or 600 people here? I mean, there were people in wheelchairs. The elevators are said not to work. I mean, you should have a box. But here we were told 17 victims. Then that went up, I think. I'm not sure, because they keep changing, 84 or something like that now, the official story. So 84, that means, where are the rest of the 500 or 600? Where are they?
Right.
And I don't know. I don't know. But I think if, once again, I'm speculating, I believe that these towers might have been evacuated beforehand. I don't know how they did it, but I don't. That there were 500 people in there. And if so, where are the bodies? Because even though you burn to death, there will still be a body. But here, very few body bags. And also, the bodies that are being carried out are taken out by people from a funeral home, not forensic. Like, I mean, this is a crime scene, a possible crime scene. There would be forensic detectives there for months. They would be taking care of everything, you know, going through the whole building. As far as I know, nope.
Huh.
And then they had a whole lot, you know, people were so kind to donate the food and clothes and stuff, but there were no people to collect it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So yeah, that one seems definitely suspicious. Another big insurance play, like we saw at 9/11, plus obviously some other multifaceted agendas. As we're getting to the halfway point, I wanted to ask you what you see in the future. You know, you've dissected a couple of these. You've been able to predict them and foresee where the next attack might be or the next media event might be. What are you thinking now before we get into the second hour? What can you tell us about recent clues or what you think might be next in line?
Well, in the second part, I think if we can go into more details around all the things that followed afterwards, because it's just an ongoing. But I believe that there was like a wave of alleged terror, and there was a wave of exposure where I was trying, and other researchers, incredible researchers, were doing everything they could to expose it. And after that, it's come to almost like a standstill. And I hope we can keep it like that. You know, there's some minor, ridiculous, small ones. There's a lot of alleged accidents also that we're going to cover in the second hour with vehicles involved that are also there to just pump fear in and prepare the population, global population, for so-called smart cities. But if I have a say, we are going to stop this and get our beautiful world back in balance.
Mm-hmm. Well said. And I think you were talking about some of the clues involve the Statue of Liberty or New York City, perhaps. Are those still in the cards? Is that still something you're considering?
No. This was after the 22nd of March attack. But it is still there because the targets that they choose are almost always the same. The targets they choose are either a location with a touristic value, with a national identity, like the Eiffel Tower, the Twin Towers, Times Square. You got Acropolis, Venice, these type of places, the Colosseum in Rome. But they're running out of that. They tried these places. And the second type of target that they've been focusing at are centers of transportation, like airports, train stations, bus stations, and also vehicles of transportation, like trains, planes, buses, and so on. But now, since they're running out, they're not that many, and they've used more or less all of them the last few years since there's been so many different attacks. So now they moved into, I would say, more and more arenas like rock concerts, sports events, and so on, where the rock star or the team are this symbol, this national symbol, where if they hit that, you will get the same emotional impact, because it's always the emotional impact they want. They always build it on their old Roman template, problem, reaction, solution. They, the human powers, secretly create a problem to get us into total fear mode, going, oh my God, we need protection. And then we turn towards the ones that we believe are there to protect us, not understanding that it's actually them who create. The only way we can solve this problem is by, and in comes their solution. And the solution every single time is something we would never, ever have accepted had it not been for the problem. Problem, reaction, solution. So this is why they want us in fear mode all the time, so that we will beg for protection. But the ones that we need protection against are the ones that are offering us protection, because they are the ones that are doing it to us.
Mm. Well said. And you had mentioned there actually being an agenda behind the vehicles thing and getting us ready for smart cities. You mean like, again, with the problem, reaction, solution, people are getting hit by cars or people are using cars as a weapon. So thus we need to usher in the driverless car. Is that kind of what you're thinking?
It's not kind of what I'm thinking. It is exactly what I'm thinking.
Huh.
Because this whole thing was a mystery for me for a long time. It started with the Berlin truck attack. Then there was the Jerusalem truck. Then there was the Melbourne car attack. Then there was the car attack on the Westminster Bridge. Then there was the van attack on the London Bridge. Then there was the van attack in the Finsbury Park. Then there was Times Square, the car attack there. It just goes on and on and on. And also many, many accidents. I tell you, I don't know in what country you are at the moment. I will guarantee you that the number of bus accidents or people driving into crowds with vehicles will have increased a lot. Also trains that derail and crash into. They're there to make the vehicle the problem. They want us in such fear mode that we're just stuck. You know, so we don't dare to take transport either. But what they're doing is preparing us for their agenda, which is partly the so-called smart cities, which is just down the line. I mean, they're aiming at around 2040, 50, something like that, where the cities, so-called smart cities, are totally digitalized based on artificial intelligence, and where all transports are remotely controlled or automated. Driverless, autonomous vehicles. So here, instead of with the mass shootings in the US where they're saying, oh, we had another mass shooting in a school, once again, victims, children and women, teachers, that is the thing that goes home. instead of saying we need more mental care in the U.S. because there's so many of these mass shootings, they say, no, it's the automatic weapons that is the one. It's the shotguns. It's the this and it. It's the weapon that is the problem. Get rid of the weapon and you are safe. There's no logic to it when you think of it.
Right.
And here in Europe, there are no guns at all the same way. So here they go for the vehicles instead. So it started with trucks, then it was vans, then cars, rental cars, now buses. Buses are big in England. It's ridiculous the amount of bus accidents. And you see these videos that are just incredible. You know, like somebody's walking down the street and a driverless bus just comes down. There are no driver in it. And still it can go from side to side. And just there's especially one guy where there's a purple bus coming and it just smacks right into the back of this guy, throws him to the pavement. It just misses him with just a few centimeters. He just stands up, brushes himself up and walks into the pub. I mean, how likely is that?
Right. Another element of the vehicle thing that I thought was interesting in terms of things that you guys have across Europe that we don't really have here in the States is those center posts that can come up in the street to block off a certain road, or if there was a person trying to get away, you could quickly, like the city could pull up this post in the middle of the road to stop vehicles. And you've talked about installing more of those posts, and that's really interesting because it's like a frog in boiling water. You're slowly bringing in a police state, slowly bringing in control and putting more and more potential roadblocks into the street justified by these attacks.
It's always for your protection. Oh, they're so kind. They're so considerate. You know, they're called bollards. And you will see that after every single event like this, part of their solution is putting up bollards. And also mobile ones, like you said, that just comes right out of the street and boom. But now also they're talking about, I can't remember what it's called, but energy protected zones, where they put like an energy field around it that will stop vehicles from entering. I don't know how it works, but it's a very high-tech, scary thing, I would say. But also, you say you don't have it in the States. I'm telling you, you are. You're getting it here because it started right after this. Before the Times Square thing happened, these bollards appeared in Times Square, and I think it was somewhere in California as well. And then the Times Square car, if you remember, when that just suddenly, in a very weird way, just flew up and landed on top of these bollards. You know, so every photo you see it, you see the bollards as well. And the company that installed these bollards very proudly presents it on their website. And they even filmed the exact bollards where the car then ended hanging up. And I tell you, that whole thing, I can go into some detail as well about that Times Square thing, because that was very sophisticated. Where normally when these attacks happen, there are no CCTV footage. I mean, they just shut them down. And it's an Israeli company that are in charge of it every single time, more or less, called ICTS. They're the ones that, you know, they charge billions for installing them. And then right before it happened, they're shut off, and right after it happened, they're turned on again. So many times. So it's standard. When these things happen, no CCTV footage. Same with Pentagon when the planes happen. I mean, that is only the most protected building in the world. And we are being told, no, very sorry, there was only one camera from a gas station down the road. Come on. Come on. So anyway, in Times Square, suddenly the game was different because suddenly there were multiple cameras that had recorded this guy. Once again, it was a guy, an immigrant, a Mexican guy, this time who just had a bad day and thought, well, I am pissed off. I'm going to kill a lot of people. So I'm going to drive up on the pavements just like they did in, or it's said that they did in London, and just the way they said it happened in Melbourne. And so on. He did a similar thing. So there were multiple angles of this CCTV footage. But when you check it out, one thing that is interesting, in what buildings were these cameras? And all of the buildings were banks and other companies connected to this global elite where these cameras were. But But when you check them out and you go frame by frame by frame, you will see that they do not match up. For instance, there's some horrific images of this car just going down the pavement and people are flying in all different directions. But when you check it out frame by frame by frame, you will see that, for one thing, there's one guy sitting on the front right fender. He's sort of sitting with his knees up, but it looks like he's hit and he's about to fly off the car, but he keeps sitting there, you know, and the car moves on like maybe 20, 25 yards. He's still sitting in the exact same position, meaning he's strapped on to the fender. Then you got another body across the windscreen that doesn't move at all. And then you have what looks like a female body down underneath the front fender, hanging on there, but that is not moving either. And then you have the people that are being hit. They are hit and then they just roll over and stand up. And you got like a director that comes out afterwards giving sort of like, and that's a cut. Right in the background, you can see him go like this. You can also see that these people that are being hit, there's one woman, she rolls over, and then when her body goes in under, there's a shadow from a telephone pole. And when her legs passes that shadow, they just stop existing. And the thing is, it's CGI. I tell you, CGI. Then you have the car at one point, just before it hits these boulders, there's smoke coming out behind the car for no apparent reason. You know, the smoke is coming out sort of like from the back of the car, not from the exhaust or something like that. It should come out from the front, you know, the grill or the radiator that could have been smashed by hitting something very hard. Normally not a pedestrian wouldn't be enough, but something on metal or concrete or something like that would break the radiator and then you would get the smoke. But the smoke after the car, there's also a very strange wet track after it. That smoke is only on one angle of the footage. The same footage from another camera, there's no smoke behind the car. And then it's said that it comes and then it hits. He's aiming to hit more people and it just slams into this boulder and the back of the car goes way up in the air and then lands on top of these boulders. But when you compare to how they do Hollywood stunts with air, I can't remember what they call it. They have underneath, they got a hydraulic in the street itself. They put like an hydraulic cannon, an air cannon, so that when the vehicle passes and it's with photocells so that they can time it exactly, when the vehicle passes in a stunt scene and so on, they have this like a catapult or an air cannon in the street built in so that when it's all measured out and so on, when the vehicle passes, boom, this cannon just blows this air out, compressed air, or sometimes it's like a hand, a metal arm that just pushes up and lifts the bottom of the car up in whatever angle you wanted. If you wanted to slide over or turn the whole way up, you know, like many Hollywood films, you see cars that hits another car and then it just flips over the car it hit and lands on the roof. That is not the normal way an accident is. The vehicles just crash in and destroys each other. But it's done with these kind of guns. And it's the exact same thing you see here. And there's also the same type of smoke coming from underneath the car when the back of the car is lifted up and then it lands on here. Then also you see there's CCTV cameras from Times Square early that morning. And early that morning, all of these metal bars where they block off the whole area, which was blocked off, was there in the morning. And then you have the victims that are there, all of them with the same water bottle. I've been an extra on many film sets and so on. Do you know if it's hot and you're doing a film shoot, you got the one in charge of the extras and so on, will walk around and just hand out the exact same water bottles. Here, all of the ones that are wounded or hurt, all of them have this bottle next to them. And then you have, there's one guy in a black t-shirt who was hit by the car. I think he had black long shorts on. He has like a body harness underneath his t-shirt. You can see it when he's lying there. It just goes on and on. So what actually happened? I tell you that what I believe often happens, like, for instance, the truck attack in Stockholm, where it said that this truck just went straight into a mall. People that were there said that the car was there 20 minutes before it happened, but covered. You know, so it's like, and action, poof, they just uncover the vehicle in the position where it's supposed to be. And then you pumped out all of this live footage through mainstream media saying, this happened, this happened, this happened. So people are on standby, the crisis actors are on standby, and then countdown, 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 and action. People just move into position down on the pavement within seconds. You know, you will always see that there are people around them taking care of them, but these are often crisis actors as well, or controllers. And you will see in the outskirts, the outer perimeters of these areas where people are wounded, there will be often middle-aged, a little overweight, but former military guys that are there as what is called bouncers to make sure that normal people don't get anywhere close to them. You will also see that the victims that are being treated, they are giving CPR and all of these things. If you look in the background, the whole area has been cordoned off. You know, the plastic bands are already there. Normal people are standing like 100 yards, like a crowd looking in. And in a normal accident or if something like that happened, you get people to the hospital as soon as possible. Get them in the ambulance, get them to the hospital. That is the main thing, as soon as possible. Here we see they're there after 40 minutes. Live footage, you know, helicopters are still filming. People are giving them CPR half an hour after it happened. Mm-hmm. And so on. It is not real.
Right. I mean, that's a excellent breakdown. So many elements there have got to raise suspicion in people's mind. And on the subject of footage of these events, it just reminded me at the London Bridge incident, I've heard you talking about the footage there and that the people who filmed the incident all seem to be pretty well connected. And that's very suspicious, too. Can you tell us about those people and their connections that seem odd?
It's a super good question or point you're making here, because it's always a question. Who took that photo? You never ask these questions, you know. And for instance, at the Westminster Bridge attack, there were all the footage came from two photographers. Both of them connected to the government. These are the photographers, one of them working for AP, Associated Press, and the other one for Reuters. They normally fly around taking photos of Theresa May, Donald Trump, these type of people. And they just happened to be on the bridge that day. Not impossible. Absolutely not. I mean, it was close to the parliament. But where are all the photos from normal people? You know, there were multiple buses on the bridge. There should have been hundreds of people there. But when you look at it, they're empty, the buses, and so on. And they use buses in all of these operations to block off the streets. That's how they do it. They've got helicopters from above, aerial view, and then they control some of the buses without people in them, so that when it's time to go live, what they do is they just stop a bus, you know, and create a queue so that you're like there, you're driving, and the bus in front of you just stops. You just have to wait. But when you do this simultaneously around the area, you get the free few minutes that you need to carry this whole thing out without any interference. And here you will see again and again, these buses are being used to block the whole area. Be very aware of these buses. It's also the same buses that they use to drive, transport extras, equipment, and so on location and from location. In London, it was ridiculous. They had like, I don't know how many different buses to block the whole thing off, since it was right in the center of London. At Times Square, there's a massive big white bus there that they're using also to block the view from normal people so that they can't see what's on and so on, because they don't want us close. They don't want us to put our nose in these things.
Hmm.
So I'm sorry, what was your question?
Oh, just the suspiciousness of the people filming. Shlomo Shapiro, the woman, okay, media contact, yeah, for NATO, yeah, the Poland foreign, yeah, minister.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So at the Westminster Bridge attack, the first video footage that was went out there was taken from a guy who was in a taxi on his way somewhere. And you can see he gets, or it's filmed very smoothly, you know, on the outside of the car. You can see there's a few people lying in the street and so on and so on. And there's a man in the background phoning for an ambulance saying, I think there's two or three victims. But the official story was much, much bigger, like 40 in total. So anyway, it turned out, I found out who the guy was who filmed it. And it turned out that he was the former foreign minister of Poland. And the name, just when I found that, I thought, I know the name. And he's a member of the Bilderberg group. He's also extremely pro-NATO, which is in this whole thing again and again and again. So here we have this footage of only two photographers that were connected directly to government and controlled media. And then the other one, a Bilderberg member, filmed this whole thing. And afterwards, when this happened, there was a massive big red helicopter landing in the whole thing, filmed by international media, like coming from an angel from the sky. And on it, there's a big Freemasonic symbol, and it says London Freemasons in big letters on this helicopter that lands right outside the English Parliament. And also, they have paid big, big amounts investing, the London Freemasons, into the ambulance services, the helicopter services. So many of these vehicles that are driving around there, ambulances and so on, are directly financed by the London Freemasons. Very proudly. I mean, it's hidden in plain sight.
Right. That's just so interesting. And another thing about Freemasons is I've also heard you talking about shoes in a lot of this footage and some strange inconsistencies around that.
I tell you one thing over the years that I never understood was that why are there always shoes lying around? Why are people always without one or two shoes? And why are they sometimes without like one trouser leg? You will see that repeatedly. And I found one time, just by more or less accident, I stumbled over on a Freemasonic website, you know, more or less a Freemasons for Dummies, where it describes the way they carry out their rituals. And one of the things that the new members have to do is they have to roll up one of their trouser legs and then take off one shoe. And that one shoe shows that this individual, also the trouser leg, this individual is doing it voluntarily. If there are two shoes missing, then that shows grace to the location or worship of the location of the sacrifice being carried out and so on. And here, once I started seeing that, I felt, oh my God, that is it. That is it. Because this is one of the way they send these signals out to other Freemasons all over the world, saying our operation, we're in it, we're in control, you know. So it's just one of these things. And you will see, for instance, after the Bataclan shooting in Paris, shoes all over the place. Often it's Nike, more or less always Nike, sometimes Adidas, but Nike, 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 Nike product placement. Incredible amount of Nike shoes that are there. Most of the time, black with the white logo. Super sharp. In the middle of photos, you will see there can be lots of SWAT teams or things going on. And right in the middle, one shoe, Nike. Super sharp product placement, I tell you. Anyway, so after the Bataclan shooting, the alleged shooting, I always have to say alleged. There's one person inside an ambulance where there's several photos taken over a period of minutes where they're holding up both his feet, the victim's feet, bare feet in the air inside the ambulance. I don't know what, if you've been shot, that would be the solution for it instead of get the ambulance to the hospital, I would suggest. But you can see the background changes, there are people around it, but they still hold the feet up like that. Then you have at the Westminster Bridge attack where there's a police officer that they claimed was killed, stabbed to death. Him as well, when they're doing everything they can to save his life, and there's this British MP that comes out, and then they smear some ketchup on his forehead so it looks very dramatic. And he's there trying to help. He's pushing away normal, you know, people working with medical and ambulance drivers. And he's sitting there becoming this major hero that was then knighted after this whole thing because what he did was so incredible. But what they're doing there as well, they're holding up both this, if it's a real body or a dummy, I don't know, but both his bare feet in the air. And they're looking at it. It almost looks like this religious painting where it's like, hallelujah, and then the feet are in the middle.
Hmm.
Then you have one guy that was officially trying to save this police officer. And the next day, he was invited to morning TV in Britain. And he comes to the studio bare feet. He does not have shoes on in the studio. And he said he lost his shoes when this whole thing happened, when he was trying to save this police officer.
Weird.
So I would say, if you lost your shoes, this is the day after, first time on television, pick another pair of shoes. Is that too much to ask for? But they're sending out the message. That's the thing. I would also like to suggest that, do you remember a few years ago where there was the so-called green revolutions
mm-hmm.
in Arab countries, northern African countries, where there was a string of revolutions in countries that was actually through Facebook. They say that it was the first sort of uprising where social media was really playing an active part. And afterwards, a lot of evidence has come forward suggesting that it was actually the CIA, Mossad, and so on, the same old players that were there just getting rid of somebody on the throne and replacing them with their own puppet that they can control. They were called the Green Revolutions. Then in the Ukraine, there was a very similar one, but they called it the Orange Operation. Here, I'm telling you, there's a color code you will see that goes through all of these different events, and it's pink or magenta. Purple, pink, that is the color code. And I believe that what we are seeing is what I call the Eurospring, that they're trying to destabilize Western European countries with these repeated attacks. Because in Northern Africa, they could spark revolutions because they were so miserable, they were so poor, they were hungry. And when people are hungry, angry, miserable, that's when you can spark a revolution. But here in Europe, people are well fed. They're under a lot of pressure financially, you know, with debts and so on, but they're living a life in luxury. So you can't get it moving the same way. So here, terror is the way to do it. So they're doing what I would call the Eurospring. It's a round, round and round in the same circles, same NATO countries, like I mentioned before, same cities, same police districts. Again, same theme, Allah Akbar. You know, lone crazy guy driving into crowds or stabbing people. Because here they're trying to, in Europe, we don't have so many guns. So here they're trying to make knives the problem. In Sweden, France, England, knives, knives, knives. And soon, I tell you, they will go for spoons and forks as well.
Hmm.
So just to get all kinds of ways that we can defend ourselves, but just take it away from us.
Right.
So this is what I believe what we're seeing. And when NATO have their own big operations, their exercises, please remember, normally there's 14, 15 different countries involved officially, and it's the exact same countries we see here. Same again. So I can tell you, if, inshallah, I really hope we've come to the end of this, because they're so ridiculously bad, these operations now. But the next one, if there are next one, it will be France. If it's in Europe, it will be France, England, Germany, Belgium, Holland, possibly Denmark, possibly Sweden, Turkey. There's a little chance for Spain. What have I forgot? Otherwise, these are the ones repeated over and over and over and over. If it's in Paris, it will be in Police District 11. Same police district as the Bataclan. most of these cafe shootings, that was the same, that is alleged to have happened the same day. Charlie Hebdo, same police district. It's just the same, the same, the same. And if Pink Floyd was touring, you wouldn't be surprised if they play the same repertoire in Manchester as they did in Melbourne or in Stockholm. Here we're seeing the same, the same, the same, the same. Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar. It's just incredibly tiresome for someone like myself.
You know? I can imagine. Yes, I agree too. I think it's pretty obvious there's just a ton of manipulation going on and that they're using the same playbooks, but it does seem like people are kind of becoming a bit numb to these events. There's just too many. I mean, do you see them getting kind of diminished returns, or do you see their end game changing at this point?
I'm super optimistic. I hope every single time that this was the last one. Oh, this is the last one. No, this is the last one. And by getting to the root, the core root thing now with crisis solutions, if I'm correct, then the spotlight is spot on the operational unit. You know, that is messing it up big time. And also with NC4, you know, this NC4 company, that really needs to be looked into as well, owned by Israeli interest. Israel is every single time is there in the background. One of my friends, a researcher and author, Nicholas Kollerstrom, he wrote in his book that to study terrorism without studying Mossad, the Israeli Mossad, is like watching Hamlet without the prince. And I really agree. I mean, Benjamin Netanyahu is Mr. Terror, you know. I also would like to point out that when it comes to the eyewitnesses of these alleged attacks, what I found is that they belong to either of three groups. Either they have some kind of connection to theater or movies, or they're connected to media somehow, or they're connected to government. These are the three. And for instance, at the Stockholm truck attack, I found 24 people that is said to have seen this, that have been interviewed in media and TV, all international media, 24 in total, including some from Belgium and Holland. Out of 24, how many do you think were connected either to movies or theater, government or the media? How many do you think? What would be a natural percentage?
I think anything over 30-40% would be suspicious.
21. 21 out of 24. And it's,
wow.
I tell you, it's only because I have not been able to find any links of the last three ones.
Yeah, that's definitely suspicious because those aren't huge industries when you consider everything else.
It's like then the London Bridge, the latest one. More or less everyone that reported from there as an eyewitness belonged to some kind of media. Then you have, there was a similar thing that happened in Paris. Oh my God, in the Notre Dame. So inside the church, people were sitting with their hands up, you know, 100 people or so inside the cathedral, the Notre Dame, another symbolic thing, once again, to get the emotions going. And who was she? She was a former NATO member. At the Berlin shock attack, one of the people that was there pressed for NATO. And then, if I can just rant on for a little while,
Yeah. You
mentioned when the alleged Nice attack happened, there was one guy filming from a balcony when this truck started the attack. We tracked down, he was standing on the balcony of the Westminster Hotel on Promenade des Anglais, the English Promenade in Nice, France. He was filming before the attack. He was filming the truck. Once again, if the camera is going before anything happens, you have to ask questions. Why did he film it? And who is he? So this guy turned out to be a German journalist called Richard Gutjahr. Okay. So I and many other researchers started tracking him down. Who is Richard Gutjahr? Turns out that he's married to a woman called Einat Wilf. So Einat Wilf is Israeli. Nothing weird with that. But she's a former member of Knesset, the Israeli government. She did her military duty connected to Mossad. And she was one of the advisors for Shimon Peres, the former, you know, leader of Israel, not just anyone. And through him, through Richard Gudjar, direct contacts or connections with Mossad. You have to sort of like, what? Then just a few days later, when I was pointing out, I found clues that was pointing straight to Acropolis. I went out and said, Acropolis, Acropolis. It turned out there, it was the Olympia, which is the pre-temple to Acropolis in Greece, but it was the Olympia supermarket in München, Germany. So who was there and just happened to film it? Richard Gudjar. What are the chances? And then one of the witnesses that was one of the people interviewed most in international media was a young girl called Tamina Stoll. And she had just come home from the US where, among other things, there were photos taken of her with Hillary Clinton. Okay. So who is Tamina Stoll? She's the daughter of, you got it, Richard Gudjar. Okay. So then we had the truck attack in Berlin. Was Richard Gudjar there? I mean, come on. No, he was not. But his friend that worked at the Berlin Morgenpost, he was the one walking around filming there. And then also right before this happened, there was an Israeli terror expert called Shlomo Shapiro on location at this Christmas market. But he just took a bus and went home to his hotel. Phones rang after it happened, and he was called in TV studios being the expert and being interviewed in many different programs on German media. So who is Shlomo Shapiro? He's an international terror expert. So the chances of him being exactly on location before a terror event happened, you have to question it. But one of his colleagues at the University of Tel Aviv is Einat Wilf, the wife of Richard Gudjar. And then when this thing happened in London, who was called in as an expert? Shlomo Shapiro. I mean, am I the only one seeing some kind of pattern here?
Yeah, that's suspicious for sure.
Do you know, you had Benjamin Netanyahu when the London bombings went off. He was there for a conference right just a few hundred meters from where some of the bombs went off at the London bombing, the 7/7 bombings. Okay, the bus that was also blown up was blown up right outside the office of the Tavistock Institute and the ICTS, the Israeli company that controlled the CCTV cameras. I mean, not nearby, right outside their windows. Okay. Then you had Rudolf Giuliano, the former mayor of New York, who is one of the central people in the 9/11 whole drama with the Twin Towers and so on. Very, very, very suspicious what he was doing that day. And where was he? Well, he was right side by side with Benjamin Netanyahu. Then you have this in Manchester where the manager of Ariana had a meeting 2 weeks before with Benjamin Netanyahu.
Yeah.
Then you had the founder of the security company that took care of the Manchester arena. His name, I forgot his name now, Mike Huge, I think, or something like that. Mike Noel, I believe. The founder of this Shosek company suddenly ended up dead just a few weeks after the alleged attacks.
Possible.
But once these things just start, repeat, it just keeps repeating and repeating, repeating, you have to ask yourself, what is going on?
Right. Definitely. Man. And we mentioned Bilderberg a couple of times. I know that you're very active in keeping an eye on the Bilderberg meetings. And of course, we just had one this summer. Were you able to extract anything from that or get any ideas about coming agendas from any leaks that came out of there or any contacts with people that you're in communication with? I was just curious.
No, I've been very interested in this group because it's part of the shadow world government. It's the Bilderberg Group, the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Skull and Bones, Club of Rome. These are sort of players on a certain level, absolutely not the top of the power pyramid, but they are very active in what is going on. I was invited as the speaker outside the Bilderberg meeting in 2014, where I, according to many sources, exposed and stopped the planned massacre right outside the hotel where they were meeting. So this is a group that I followed a lot. And one of the things is that they keep moving location every year. And up until 2012, they were more or less denying their existence. But then it came in 2013 where it just came to a point where it was just ridiculous. They couldn't. There were so many people that had exposed them. So suddenly they turned it around. They hired a German PR company saying, no, but we're just this very nice group of gentlemen, mostly gentlemen, you know, talking about golf and throwing darts and having a drink, you know, in privacy. So they had this whole propaganda thing about how nice they were. And then they went open with where they're going to meet. Since then, it's not been a secret so much where they're meeting. And the only place, as far as I know, that they met more than once is the Marriott Hotel in Chantilly, Virginia, where they met four times this year as well. And if you look at where that is located, it's just a stone's throw from the CIA in Langley. It's also just a stone's throw from Washington, D.C. So is that a coincidence or are they in their own backyard? That is what I would suggest.
Hmm.
So this year, I've been so busy with all of these attacks, and especially since this Manchester attack happened right before. So just like everyone else, got diverted. The attention got diverted. So I haven't followed them at all. But the Marriott Hotel, if we go back to the Westminster Bridge attack, I love it, you know, because like, when you look at these things, you have to ask yourself, if somebody is wounded or hurt in any way or form, seriously wounded, for instance, like if they had a truck drive across them, which there's one woman that they know, a bus, you would think, bring that poor soul to a hospital. So where's the nearest hospital? Well, the nearest hospital is right by Westminster Bridge. I mean, not near, it's right there. You cross the bridge, and if you come from the Parliament, Big Ben, you cross the bridge, it's right there on your right-hand side. So where did they carry all of this wounded? Where did they take the victims and so on? Well, first of all, if you look at the raw footage from this whole thing where there are these helicopters circling, you will see, just pick anyone. I dare you, pick anyone on the bridge and just nail them with your eyes and follow them. You will see that they are carrying the same people across the bridge and then back across the bridge. Then they cross the bridge again and then they go back. Or in a wheelchair, they cross the bridge, you know, and there are lots of ambulances that are parked totally impossible side by side, blocking all traffic and so on. So where is the hospital? Right there. So you shouldn't even need ambulance. You should just run them there as fast as possible. But here they're still on the bridge after 30, 40 minutes. Exposed to cameras from all over the world. So where did they go afterwards? Did they take them to the hospital? No, they went straight across the road where you can see victims being carried in on stretchers and wheelchairs and so on, blocked off by the police, but the police is there very kindly to you know, lift the cordons and so on, get the people in there. So what is the entrance to that building? It is the Marriott Hotel. And what was the hotel that they were planning to blow up in Copenhagen, the one I stopped? The Marriott Hotel in Copenhagen.
Right. Seems like they've got some friends in the Marriott network that are willing to open up their buildings to these possible attacks.
They're members of the same group. That's the whole thing.
Right.
And they were planning a big security scam there, so insurance scam there as well, including an attempt to block the whole truth movement and censor the internet, if I'm correct. If you want to, we can do a whole show about that incident on its own, what I saw, what I suspected, how I got it confirmed by people from the CIA, Chip Tatum, former Marine soldiers, people in the security agencies and so on. And then I went out the night before the meeting until 4 o'clock in the morning, just spreading it out, saying, it's now 4:32 in the morning AM Danish time. This is what I suspect. This is what. And then, well, nothing happened. But the whole game changed after that. This is also why my website is called Light on Conspiracies, because the thing is to just aim the light right at them. they are like cockroaches, and I prefer cockroaches. I feel that they have a bad rap. But you aim the light, they disappear. It's the same with all kinds of criminality. They can only do it when they are not being observed. So this is why we just need to aim the light of truth right at them. Nonviolent, let the truth do the job, fearless exposure, and it will stop.
Well said. And in terms of, you know, future stage terror events, you mentioned that things seem to have come to a halt for now. But as much as they like their dates and symbolism, I'm curious about the coming eclipse. We've seen things link up with the equinox and the solstice and these sorts of events. It's hard to say if there's some cosmic force playing us or if it's something else, but has this coming U.S. eclipse come into your analysis at all?
I'm the wrong guy to speak to. I don't have so much knowledge about these things. I've heard a lot about it, but numerology, these things also, I don't know. I'm the wrong person to ask, but they're very important to these forces. That is for sure. So,
right. Something to pay attention to.
For sure. For sure. What you need to put attention to, they're very much to focus on big days like Halloween, Veterans Day, Poppy Day. Did I say Valentine's?
No, but yeah, that one too.
These type of things. And then you got the dates, like on the 22nd. For some reason, they love the 22nd of different months. Also, you have the anniversaries of former massacres. Mm. Like you will see that they keep repeating, like the same date, the mass shooting in Norway, then was the alleged mass shooting in München. And this year, I went out big time and warned what I believe was their next target, which was going to be the Robbie Williams concert in München at the exact, very, very close to the mass shooting last year in München, but also the exact location from the alleged terror massacre in 1972 in München, where they said that the Israeli Olympic team was killed by Palestinians.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many things of historical facts that I'm unlearning on a daily basis almost, you know, like I thought I knew, and then it just turns out, oh my God, they got me there as well.
Right.
You know,
right.
Because these things have been going on for much longer than I ever suspected. So when I backtrack and I go down and I say, oh my God, there as well. There as well. There as well. Incredible. Incredible how they have been able to pull it off.
Right. You can unpeel more and more layers, and it does get kind of mind-blowing sometimes. And as we're starting to wrap this up, I'm just curious, outside of what you're seeing in stage terror events, are there other things that have you concerned, other campaigns against the people that you would advise listeners to watch out for?
What I would say is question everything. Question everything. Now, at this point, the way I see it, mainstream media hijacked, and you can just see it. I'm a former journalist, so I mean, I didn't think I was controlled, but I mean, journalists are normal, decent, honest people, hardworking. But when you go up in the layers of the ownership and the editors and so on, producers, you will see that there's this control, hidden hand that are forcing them to do. Do you know, what did Ariana Grande have for breakfast, or that football player's knee injury, or what? And everything except focusing on important stuff. There's so much about soap operas. There's so much about these stars and X factors and things that it's the diversion away from us noticing what is actually going on. So whatever you read, whatever you hear about, ask yourself, who benefits from me believing this? And every time there's something that will scare you, take a deep breath, maybe take a walk, pat a cat, hug your wife, come back when you're in balance and say, look at it again and say, who benefits from me believing this?
Right.
Because it's only when we're fearful that they can control us. They need us fearful. You know, that is why I totally focus on love, compassion, forgiveness, all of these things, to a large extent, to keep me in balance, even though I've had death threats and stuff like that. I mean, not nice. At the same time, the more you are in a balance, the safer you are. The more scared you are, the more you're freaking out, then the more they can control you.
Amen, man.
So question everything. Question everything. And also, I can tell you, in whatever country you are, I can tell you what your newspapers are telling you these days. It doesn't matter if you're in Serbia, Poland, Germany, the US, Denmark, Sweden, there will be the following type of news. There will be an increase in crime. There will be riots. There will be fear of an invasion of immigrants. There will be, did I say the crime rates are going up? All kinds of weird, violent crimes. People are being knocked down on streets for no reason whatsoever. There's a lot of vehicle weird things, buses, cars, people are driving into crowds by accident or whatever. There will also be an increase of the police will be more and more useless, or they will cut down from the police so that they can't do anything, so that the crime rates will go up. The type of crimes will also be more and more colorful. So it would be like five vicars helped by a nun raped deaf children or something like that. You know, when you look at it, it's like, what? Take a step back. And if you heard about this, for instance, during the Stalin dictatorship in Russia, where we think, yeah, but there was so much propaganda and people were so not clever, you know, how could they buy this? Then you start reading the headlines in newspapers nowadays. And it's just like, if you take a step back, holy sh! Then you will also see that there would be a lot of scares, you know, like now it's chickens here in Europe. It used to be the mad cow disease, that all of these are viruses, or, oh my God, now you need to mandatory vaccines to protect ourselves, you know, oh, this and this and that, scare. All the time, it's like, it takes your attention away from looking out the window and seeing, oh my God, it's so beautiful. Look at it.
Yeah.
Look at all of these beautiful people. I love the Louis Armstrong song, What a Wonderful World.
Great cut.
You know, take that in your headset next time you walk out and feel fearful, and start listening to the words when you start looking at people around you. Because also, there are very, very few power tools they have against us. False flags are one, assassinations is another one, and also divide and conquer. That is an old Roman template as well, where they try to make us enemies within, you know, like we start fearing and hating each other, blaming each other, when we're totally innocent, all of us, most of us.
Right, right.
So start looking at each other with compassion. Start looking at and understand if what I'm saying, and many, many other researchers, excellent researchers out there, are saying that terror more or less does not exist. I have not been able to find one single Muslim terrorist ever, even though that is what I've been started out looking for. There are people of Muslim faith involved, but they every single time, if it's in the US, they've been trained, equipped, funded by the FBI and so on. The people that are set there to protect us, they are the ones doing it and infiltrating these groups, turning them into these things so that they will go down as patsies and so on.
Right. Touche.
So the thing is, if you don't know what else to do, focus on becoming fearless. Meditate, take a walk, do selfless service, to help people, help your neighbors, you know, go out, hug a cup, hug a tree, start smelling roses. I mean, it sounds airy-fairy. It would take you down. It would ground you. Look around, you know, my God, I've got a family. Maybe we should have dinner together instead of just watching this black box that is like an open sewage. It is through the black box in front of you that they control you. You know, I tell you, if you want to help change the world, there's a magic button on the remote. It's red and it says off.
Right.
Try it. Turn it off. I know it's going to be very weird to start with. You will have like withdrawals, maybe some shaking going on and stuff like that. But after a while, if you can manage and not read mainstream media, even though you are a responsible adult, I would say at this point, the responsible adult would not look at propaganda, but would start saying, hang on, something is very weird. Even I can see that. Turn off the box and then wait, you know, start enjoying yourself with your friends and family. Start helping your neighbors see what you can do in your local environment. And after a few days, there's this weird thing that will appear, that there's this sensation of feeling good. I mean, where did that come? It came from you stopping the sewage into your house. You even used that black mark as a babysitter. Not okay. Not okay. And if you look, it's in their books. I mean, Rockefeller and Brzezinski, all of these people have written books about, very openly, about their agenda, their plans, Agenda 21, how they want to hook everybody up to computers, lose total empathy for each other, be totally selfish, destroy education, destroy population with vaccines and chemtrails and all of these things. All of it is there. And when you look at it, it's total madness. Absolute madness that is going on. So we need to bring it back and just say it only continues because I allow it to. And I've had enough. So I'm going to take my personal power back.
Yeah.
And just say, if you want to fight wars, you go fight your wars. They never do. They never do. They even see us as cannon fodder and so on. They never send their own kids. They never do that. And look, how they treat soldiers and so that comes home after having maybe sacrificed limbs and lives and friends and everything, you know, fighting for liberty and democracies in other countries. Absolute bullshit. What these wars are about is rape, plunder, conquer, total domination.
Right. And these terror attacks, they never target the elite. They always target just regular people enjoying a nice Saturday.
That's the thing. If you want to be safe, stay close to them. That's the thing, you know. And this is also, if we go back to problem, reaction, solution. Nowadays, on media, because our concentration span has become so short due to fluoride in the water and GMOs and whatever, so they need to deliver the message fast before you get bored and change channels. So next time something happens, please watch this. You will see a reporter on site. There will be an eyewitness, and the reporter will say, so what happened? The eyewitness will say, oh, it was so horrible. There were this and that, and they were screaming Allah Akbar, and there were blood and bombs and pieces of body, whatever. Horrible. So that's the problem. There to get you into the emotional reaction. Oh, my God. And then, since you're focus and concentration span is so short, the reporter will very often deliver the solution. So it will be within 30 seconds or 1 minute, problem, your reaction, and then boom, the reporter will give you, because they're all in on it. When these reporters, you will see like Anderson Cooper or whatever their name, it's the same reporters every single time. And so wait for the solution. Just take a step back. Wait for the solution. So when the Charlie Hebdo thing happened, if you remember, there were two brothers that went into a newspaper office and killed the whole lot. Okay. So the reporter said, well, that means that we have to have heightened airport security. It's like, what? What? There was nothing about airports, but that was the thing, one of the things that they managed with that one. When the mass shooting was in Norway, after that, there was a mass shooting on an island in Norway where there were about 68 young teenagers that are said to have been killed by this mass murderer. Absolutely not true, the official story, but that was the official one. The chief of the secret police in Norway, she said when she was interviewed, problem, reaction, solution. She said, this would never have happened had the population been microchipped.
Yeah.
Can you see how they do it?
Absolutely.
So take a step back and breathe. And, you know, once you're back in balance, then start looking at it. Whoever the creator is gave us this beautiful thing between our ears called a brain, and it's there to be used. No disrespect, but we've been so sort of put to sleep. And in one way, we should be proud of ourselves because we've been up against the worst propaganda machine or the most advanced the world had ever seen. And they have tried everything. Wars, false flag, inside terror, assassination, you name it. Vaccines, killing people right, left and center, chemtrails, HARP. And we're still standing. So really, we should be applauding ourselves just by that.
Yeah. Well, wise words, man. It is always a pleasure to have you here. You're so jam-packed full of information, and you've gotten so good at tracking this campaign and noticing the patterns that you can almost make a terror attack predictions calendar at this point. And before we go, would you like to remind the people where they can support you and dig deeper into the stuff you got going on?
Greg, I got a terror calendar on my website.
Oh, wow. Nice, nice.
No, exactly for that reason, you know, so that you can see the specific dates that you need to be aware of and so on. So it will help to predict. So my website is lightonconspiracies.com, lightonconspiracies.com. I'm a one-man band who has devoted my, well, more than half my life to do everything I can to expose these forces, not financed by anyone. So if anyone respects what I'm doing or would like to support, it is extremely appreciated. I've got Patreon. It's patreon.com/lightonconspiracies. I've got donation buttons. I've got my newsletter, monthly newsletter, where I try to decode these operations and right. also predict them. I've predicted several in these newsletters. It comes out the first every month. It's a quite a long newsletter. Lots of photos where I point out these clues and details that you have to be aware of and so on. Also, I've got a membership area. I've got multiple books on Amazon and so on. So it's extreme. And also, if you would like me to come to wherever you are, I am willing to do anything I can to help lift this world to the next level. So if that means going into speaking to SWAT teams, military gangs, you know, Hell's Angels or schools, universities, politicians, you name it. But I am not strong financially because this is not the way you go for, you know, fame and fortune, I'll tell you that one.
But true.
Get me there and I would do anything I can.
Awesome. I love it, man. You really are on their tail very closely. And, you know, you do great work, man. It is always an honor and a pleasure. Keep doing what you do and stay safe out there.
Is it okay with you if I finish with a prayer?
Absolutely.
Okay. I'm not a religious person, but here it goes. May the entire universe be filled with peace and joy, love and light. May everyone, and especially the ones who heard us, be filled with peace and joy, love and light. May the light of truth overcome all darkness, victory to that light. And I also want to point out that I've started my own podcast called Light on Conspiracies, where I created a platform for people that are normally not on other shows that have no voice or no ways to get these things out. I have really high-level experts as well. Cyril Wecht, the pathologist, Barbara Honegger, former White House employee, Chip Tatum, former assassin, Jim Fetzer, John Barber, five-time Emmy Award winner. But also, you know, normal people like today I interviewed a woman who just ended up right in the middle of this London Bridge attack and got her best friend murdered here. But now when she's trying to find out what happened, nothing adds up. It just doesn't make any sense at all. So she's walking around wondering, is he alive? Is he dead? I mean, nothing matches up and she's devastated. I've also interviewed recently the Apache Nation in the San Carlos reservation, trying to expose what's going on there. Absolute horrible things that they had to endure and so on. So please visit that one as well. And thank you so much for creating this platform, Greg, for giving the opportunity for this type of information to get out there.
Absolutely, man. Right on. You're just always on this stuff. You got your details down, clearly very passionate, and I appreciate it.
Anytime you want me back, we can do a weekly thing, you know, 365 days a year, anytime.
Awesome. We'll be in touch.
Yeah. Give your wife a hug.
I will. Are you married?
I proposed.
Oh, okay.
So I'm engaged.
All right. Congratulations.
After 19 years.
Wow. Wow. Well, you give her a hug too.
I will indeed.
All right, man. Take care of yourself.
Take care, guy. You too. Bye-bye.
The Higher Side Chat Show. Greg Carwood Company.
So we recorded an interview just before the Charlottesville protest, counter-protest clash, and then just a few days ago, we have another happening in Barcelona, and you were kind enough to hop back on with me and add a little addendum on about these two recent events and how you think they might fit into the puzzle. Obviously, two different things, but is there anything suspicious or odd that you've seen in these cases to suggest we're not being told everything?
Once again, really important not to jump to conclusions, but it's all over the same again. When you start looking into the details, we're back to the same old theme again. In the Charlottesville attack, once you really start digging into it, it turns out that they've used at least two different cars. It's not the same car. That there are several different photo shoots also. You can see when you compare the photos, you can see that, for instance, on the Dodge Challenger in the registration, the registration
license plate?
The certificate of the registration.
Oh.
The car is equipped with a sunroof. Here it is not. The car that is found crashed afterwards when the arrest was done has two dark stripes on it. That car that you see on the video, in the different videos that crashes into the crowd, do not have these stripes on. Also, the window is tinted in different ways on the two different cars. There's also around the headlights on the one that is hitting the crowd. Around the headlights, it's silver colored, but the ones that is then where the guy is said to have been arrested is the same color as the car. And so on. So there's definitely two different vehicles. It's not even, I don't think it's the same year model either of this Dodge Challenger, but it's got the same license plates on, and very strange license plates, I have to say. It's GVF, it's Ohio plated, and then 1111. Then the man that is being accused of doing it, his mother, being interviewed in the garage, she's in a wheelchair, has just left the car in the garage when she's apparently being told that this has happened. And her car, which is a Hyundai, is GVF 1122, which is, what are the chances that these plates are so close to each other? Then you see you got there's some still photos where you can see that the crowd behind and in front of the car is different than the crowd that is there on the videos. It's not the same people. They have moved around. The signs are not where they are in the still photos. You can also see that, I don't know if you see notice sometimes in action movies and so on, where you can see that the stunt drivers have had to rehearse. So you will see these black stripes from the tires, multiple times to get the maneuver exactly correct. And here you will see in two or three different locations around this site, you will see these black tires where the car has turned around, reversed and gone back and then done it again, reversed, gone back and so on. So definitely something very, very suspicious about the whole thing. There's another still photo where you can see the car from behind. It's a very good quality photo and people are starting to run away from in front of the car. But when you look at it, when you go into great details, you will see that you can see the tire print on the tires itself, meaning that the car is not moving. You can also see the exhaust so that you can see that it's standing still. It's not moving forward. It's got the braking lights on, which is not there in the video. And also, there's not the two vehicles in front of it that it's crashed into. There was a white car and then a van in front of it, sort of like a maroon-colored van. Then you see the location it's said that these people were on their way to a park for a big meeting, a big gathering. But when you check out the location of the park, it's not the way, the direction these people are walking is not really towards the park. So it's a strange street that they've chosen. So why this street? Then if you come into my world of conspiracies, you have to look at, is there a reason why this location was picked?
Mm-hmm.
And for one thing, Charlottesville is just like a stone's throw away from Langley, the CIA in Langley. It is also a stone's throw away from Washington, D.C. And it's also just a stone's throw away from the Marriott Hotel in Chantilly, Virginia, where the latest Bilderberg meeting was held just a few months ago. So it's their backyard where this is carried out. Then you look at the street. It's called the 4th Street, where this crash is said to happen. And the street that crosses it, where the cars are being pushed out onto, is Water Street. So you look at it, and this 4th Street, it's very narrow. Just because it looks quite wide on photos and videos, I tell you, I've been on location to many of these places, and it always looks a lot bigger than if you're really there. And you will see here, there's hardly a room enough for two cars here. So when you look at, there's some aerial footage of they claim it's a drone that is taking the photo. The drone is in an exact position so that you cannot see when the car hits. You can only see the first car being pushed into the center of this intersection. But when you look around, from my point of view, I'm always looking, if this is a false flag, what is needed? Would there be a reason why they chose this and so on? And this is a perfect street that can very easily be shut off in all four directions to keep normal people away. And you will see here from the aerial drone footage, there is a gathering of people right in the intersection, but there's no people at all in the rest of the streets in the different directions. And then you got multiple vehicles that are there to block off so that no one can get into this intersection. You also have one street, the Water Street. If you go down the street, there's a sharp turn. So that one can very easily be shut up out of sight so that just with a blockage. There's another, underpass, also very close on one of the other streets that could very easily be closed off out of sight as well so that no traffic will come from there. And then you have the vehicles that are blocking from the two other, so sort of completing the whole area so that they could be in total control. Then also on the corner of Water Street and 4th Street, there is a big building. And that building, the upper floors, is a parking garage, meaning this is what they normally use. They use parking garages or libraries. These are the two type of buildings that I normally come across when they carry these things out. Because in these big open spaces indoors, it gives them all the possibilities to prepare without normal people seeing anything of what's going on. They can have vehicles, pyrotechnics, all kinds of staff in there, a makeup artist, amputee, all of these things that is needed. And then the entrance from this parking garage is right into the intersection, meaning like 1, 2, 3, and boom, within a few minutes, you can have the whole area filled with your people.
Wow.
I tell you, the more I look into this and the things that just keeps, I keep falling across, there's so many things that is just pointing that this is not what we're being told. I do believe that at least one person got injured when the car reversed, but I think that was not meant to happen, but that this person got in between the cars and a pickup truck that is standing there.
Man, I mean, this has happened so recently, but you've already dissected so many inconsistencies in what we saw on television. And I mean, it's not a secret that the American people have been manipulated for a while now to really grasp onto identity politics and get increasingly polarized. And everybody's kind of on the same page that, oh yeah, they're manipulating us in that way. Is it really that weird to think that they would throw gasoline on that fire by staging something like this and amping everything up a level, because now everybody is even more angry at the other side because it's gotten violent. And it just doesn't surprise me that this is the kind of game they would play. Obviously, we don't want anyone to get hurt, but it just isn't surprising. And maybe no one did. So we have that happening. And then also right near you, I assume if you're still in Spain, we have this thing in Barcelona, at least in an area you've probably been pretty familiar with for some time.
Yeah.
Are you seeing things on this one too?
It's getting extremely boring after all of these years. It's like the same, the same, the same, the same. I keep saying that.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Spain, the important thing is to understand that these different events are connected. They are connected. That's the whole thing. They're being carried out by the same force as behind the New World Order. This is just sort of on a local, sort of like on a street level where they carry out these type of operations. And one thing I want to point out when it comes to the U.S. is that this is the first time I come across them. And it's a company called crowdsondemand.com, Crowds on Demand. And this company in the U.S. will supply you with a crowd if you need rioting, if you need a rallying, if you want supporters, if you want fans for a rock star, if you want a politician that is not very popular and you want him to look like he's the number one guy. You just hire a crowd and they will deliver the crowd to wherever you are in the States. And I am sure also in wherever else in the world, if you pay, they will transport them there. And they had a gathering for a rally in Charlotte, North Carolina, just when this happened. Now, I felt that that was almost like an ambush for people like myself, because this happened in Charlottesville. And that one, it was in Charlotte, North Carolina. But this is only a few hours drive away as well. So you could gather the crowd and then just bring them on location in buses.
You could.
So just because you see a lot of people does not mean that they are not part of the whole thing.
Hmm.
You will also see that the normal police here in Charlottesville were told to stand down.
Yep.
There are no ambulances. No ambulances. You will see that the people that are being treated are treated by other normal people or the fire brigade. No ambulances whatsoever. And they're still there after a long time. You know, like if something awful happens like that, you will have ambulances there and get the people to hospital as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Here, you will see like an hour afterwards when the police is there, their vehicles, their fire trucks, everything is there. They cornered the whole area off and the victims are still there. Shows you this is staged. And also around the corner, they have this the way of lining up the so-called wounded along the wall for Photoshop, you know, photo shoots. So it's the same. So we go to Spain. And by the way, one of the images that has been spread from Charlottesville is a guy, a demonstrator, he's fighting with a police officer, and on his t-shirt it says FC Barcelona, which is the Barcelona football club. This is the way they leave these small sort of like
little clues.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen these football clues have been in many of these different ones. So we go to Barcelona, and here in Spain, Barcelona is part of Catalonia, which is a region that has been fighting for its, self-ruling for years.
Independence?
Independence. They're trying to leave Spain, but there's a lot of struggle about that.
Huh.
And not long ago, the mayor of Barcelona said to have supported the Palestinian against Israel. And that is normally a way, if you want to get beaten up, mm-hmm. that's the way to go. And so here, this happened on Las Ramblas. Do you remember in this interview, I said that the targets they always choose are locations with a touristic value or a national identity. That is what I said. And also transports. Remember?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. Sensors for transport, like airports, train stations, bus stations, these type of things. So here, it started, it said that this crazy guy who happened to leave his ID and driver's license in the car, very handy once again, in a rental van. I'm going to come back to why they're using rental things. And okay, so it said that he started at the Plaza de Catalunya, which is the place in Barcelona. And it's very symbolic place for Barcelona and the whole fight for Catalonia, the independence of Catalonia. That is where he started. Then it said that he took this van, he drove down Las Ramblas. Las Ramblas is the touristic spot in Barcelona that you just have to go and see. It's like a pedestrian street. And so it said that he came up and he started driving down and once again was killing people while he was going. And so he drove down Las Ramblas, killed, it said that he killed, the numbers keep changing, but I think it's 13 now, and then he hit about 100 people. That is 113 individuals. That is a lot. You have a white van. There's absolutely no blood on it. There's the front of the car has had an impact, but otherwise than that. And more or less no photos of the van, no video footage, no nothing. And the people in Barcelona were told by authorities that do not upload any photos or videos to social media. Okay, so this is part of the shutting down. So here we have the van started at a very, very specific point, very important point, Plaza Catalunya. And then it drove down Las Ramblas, the street in Barcelona. And then it stopped exactly on top of, it's an artwork of a very, very famous artist, Spanish artist, Miro, Juan Miro. So when you have aerial footage, which are more or less the only photos that are of this van, it's standing right on top of this artwork. And that artwork is a very symbolic artwork for Barcelona, welcoming visitors to come to Barcelona. And it's also built on a very important old painting of the Virgin. I'm not sure which Virgin. I think it's Virgin Mary, who has the child of Jesus in her lap, and then she's with two fingers holding an orange. Now, this artwork by Juan Miró is very simplified, you know, his style is very, but that is what it's depicting. But there are photos of this guy that they say did it, this, I would say, Patsy, and on the photo, he's standing smiling with sort of like a pit bull terrier behind him, and holding an orange with the two fingers. The two finger hold, when you see all the different statues of this Virgin with the child and this orange, there are many, many, many classical artworks with this motif. There's the same two fingers and the orange. He's holding it as well. I don't know the meaning of that yet. I'm still trying to look into it. But then he started at an extremely important location. He drove down a very, very important street, and he stopped right on top of this extremely important artwork. So then another thing is that when there's multiple victims, there's always multiple nationalities. And this is when they carry out these false flags, it is to involve as many countries emotionally as possible, as many nations. Because if somebody from Nigeria was killed, nobody cares. If somebody from Ireland was killed, if you're Dutch, you don't care that much. But if it's a Dutch guy, oh my God, then the impact goes so much more.
Right.
And you in the US will know. So here it is said that 13 dead. I have to put a question mark there because it keeps changing here. And 100 hits. Okay. So out of these, how many nationalities would you think would naturally be here in a big city in Spain? How many different nationalities? Give me a number.
Probably 3 or 4 or 5, not more than that.
Okay, we're up to 30.
Jeez.
30 different ones. And then there's no Africans, there's no Pakistanis, which are normally there on Las Ramblas, you know, because these are the people selling glasses, sunshades, all of these type of things. All of them from Western Europe and so on. 30, that is 30. That is a lot.
Right.
Okay. Then you have right after that, you had an attack in Marseille in France. Marseille is also where the mafia it's a stronghold of the French mafia. That is also where one of the shooters at the JFK assassination was brought in from this city. But anyway, you had in that city, there was somebody that is said to have done a similar attack with a rental van attacking two buses. Okay, so the guy that filmed that and took photos of it and sent it, put it up, you know, on mainstream and so on his Twitter account and made headlines all over the world, is the same Israeli journalist. He was the chief editor of the second biggest Israeli TV channel. It's the same guy who filmed the shooting of the police officer at Charlie Hebdo from the balcony.
Man.
What are the chances? They changed that afterwards and said that, no, it was a guy called Jordi Mir, but that was not to start with. He was the guy who just happened to be there filming the whole thing. Now he's there again. So the reason why they do all of these vehicle attacks are, we were talking about that, for preparing people for smart cities, mm-hmm. you know, so that the vehicles would be the problem. We're back to problem, reaction, solution.
Yeah.
The vehicle is the problem, and the solution would be driverless cars.
Yeah, or remote shutdown, too. You know, they can hack into a car and shut it down. This could be a way to allow people to do something like that, you know, like a safety on a gun, but install it in an engine.
Totally. Once you go digital and remotely controlled, I mean, you can be killed and suicided and whatever. They can make you drive straight into a wall or straight into a crowd or whatever.
Right.
You know, totally depends on who's in control. But the reason I saw this morning in the UK headlines were that now they're going to make restrictions, or they're suggesting restrictions on van rentals and car rentals.
More control.
You know, problem, reaction, solutions. Here, because I don't know if I said it on earlier in this interview, but that there's so many of these vans that have been rented. You know, the London bridge attack, rental car, no, rental van. Then you had Finsbury Park attack in also in England very recently, rental van. There was another rental van as well. Rental.
Yeah. Huh.
So.
Well, and you know, people.
And then you have.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, sorry if I rant on, but like when you look at the footage in Las Ramblas here in Barcelona, it's like there's more than 200 CCTV cameras put up around this area. It's the most popular area in Barcelona. 200 cameras officially, not one of them working. Does that sound familiar to you? Then you have no video footage from normal people, but you have video footage from inside a bus that is slowly passing some of the victims. Okay, that bus is normally the bus where the crisis actors are transported to and from location. And when you look in the background, you will see that the whole area is more or less empty of people. There's no one there. And so I would highly suggest that this area has been shut up, and just maybe just like 10 minutes before, then boom, this happens, out with all the extras, put out some of these individuals that are lying there looking dead are dummies. I can guarantee you that. When you look, there's especially one girl that looks like half her body is either she's in her underwear or she's naked, but it's just very obvious that several of these bodies that are there are some of these so-called Kappa cadavers, not real bodies.
Mm-hmm.
You will also see that the number of wounded, when you start counting them, they're about 15 in total, but the official story says 130 or 113. So where are all the rest? And then you have the same behavior in Spain as in all the other areas where normal, I've spoken to several very experienced police officers, and they say when something like this happens, their task is to come to on location and just say, calm down, stay low, I'll take over from here, I will take care of the bad guys and so on. But here is the police that are creating the panic. So the police are running around screaming, run, 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 creating the stampede that is then filmed on these small areaways around the whole area. So it's the same. And then it is all then blamed on Muslims or ISIS. ISIS keep taking responsibility, which I think is very kind of them, being a creation of the US and Israel. backed by Saudi, as the boogeyman, the tool. So it's very kind of them to take responsibility, because then we see right away, yeah, it's them again.
Uh-huh. And like you mentioned, I mean, if this happened in Barcelona right after criticizing Israel, this wouldn't be the first time that a country has had an attack shortly after that leader has criticized Israel, which is weird because Israel is the one oppressing the Muslims that are apparently causing the attacks. It seems like if they're sticking up for Palestinians, they would be not on the radar of terrorists necessarily, you would think.
When you study terrorism on an international level, one of my friends, his name is Nick Collerstrom, a researcher and author, he wrote on his book, he said, to study terrorism without studying Mossad is like watching Hamlet without the prince.
Yeah.
They are the ones, together with CIA, MI6 is always there, and then they use NATO units as well, with also from the Gladio network, and that's how it's done.
And, you know, one other thing that has been going around this week that I just saw maybe three or four times since our interview is a mainstream media article about the woman who has been at three terrorist attacks.
I know, she
survived London and Paris and Barcelona's her third attack. And that doesn't make any sense, but it jives a lot with what you say, is that they use the same people and it's just a fabrication.
What are the chances? And here, she's not the only one. You had one called Mason Wells. He was on three different locations as well. But I tell you, this woman is, I really want to point that out in this interview here. What date is it today?
First, Eclipse Day.
It's the 21st of October, of August. Okay. Her name is, I believe, Janet Monaco. And this is the way they leave these clues. So if there is a hit in Monaco next, let it be known this was pointed out beforehand.
Mm.
Because that is how they do it with these. There's all of these weird names in these operations, many of them with a sexual play on words. I don't know if you noticed, we have all of these. There's so many Cassandra Dick, Cockburn, Cockron, Cox. Dicks, you have the dick on ass. No, I'm sorry for your audience, but these are names. There was one witness in Melbourne called, it was a woman, I can't remember her first name. It was something like Alison Dick on Ass.
Wow.
I mean, what is that? But, and you will see so many of these Cockburn, Cox, many of these Cox. Cassandra Dick is one of the chief investigators in England looking into. There was a guy that was sending a lot of tweets around the first Westminster Bridge attack. His name was Huge Dickinson.
What?
Huge Dickinson.
Oh my God.
Keep an eye out for them, because these are also the way that they push. You know, it's right in our face. There was another one called Annie Cattle, Kate Sheeple. And these type of names.
Kate Sheeple, wow.
It's in our face.
Man, that's another layer, man. Wow. Well, I have to thank you again for jumping on here with me so quickly. I mean, you are just so dedicated to exposing the truth in this area. I just appreciate your willingness to add this little addendum, because I do think it's important. We had gone through a little bit of a lull, and then all of a sudden, it seems like a new wave is starting. So thanks again for your breakdown and your analysis and your dedication. I really appreciate it. And take care of yourself out there.
You too, Greg. Anytime, I'm always here.
All right. Have a good one.
You too.
Wow, people. There we have it. Ole Demingard delivering the 1-2 punch. Big thanks to him for adding that last chapter. Clearly, he follows these things closely and had already noticed a lot of red flags. I know that article about the woman who's been in three attacks really set off my skepticism, and I'm not alone. I got several messages and saw several public comments that all sort of said, look, I'm not one of these crisis actor people, but this is really fishy. And you know what Robb Stark used to say? Everything before the but is just bullshit. So it is fishy, and I think an article like this is kind of overplaying their hand. Maybe they noticed her in too much footage, they had to run an article just to justify it. But apparently, there are others, like Ole said. I also saw those articles about police being asked to stand down and allow the protesters to clash, to kind of corral them into each other even. And I didn't see any actual sources for those claims in terms of real officers. It's all just anonymous, but it's not that hard to make up a name anyway. It doesn't mean that would be necessarily credible either. But it's the type of story that really doesn't surprise me. It kind of fits what I think the narrative is right now. And the car in the crowd thing, it's kind of like, could a person have gotten so worked up by the media manipulation and the drum beating and the my team versus your team polarization that they drove a car through a crowd? Of course. But even if that's the story, it would be a case where a weak-minded person who is susceptible to manipulation ate it all up. And so the culture creators, the colorers of the lenses in which a person like that sees the world, would still have some responsibility to bear, because without the aggressive cultural push, they probably wouldn't have come up with that idea on their own. There's also the issue of overall sensitivity for the victims in these situations. Some people think it's disrespectful to even look at this sort of thing, which just makes no sense to me. Looking deeply into who did or didn't die, why they did or didn't die, and who's ultimately responsible is about caring. So don't let the machine say, well, we shouldn't look into these things out of respect for the dead. I disagree. The system doesn't give a fuck about the dead. They just don't want to get caught. And if you've turned on the TV or been on social media, there's a lot of debate over who's a Nazi and who's a fascist. And you can't deny we've seen some classic racist shit on the right side. Seen it my whole life. I grew up in Missouri in a place where the KKK literally solicits for new members at the Peevely Flea Market flag booth. I've been there. I've had them try to put a pen in my hand, so that's not new or surprising. But on the left, you have a lot of cheerleading for zero tolerance of hate, punching Nazis, supporting violence and suppression of the other side, and that's a slippery slope. It's just as tyrannical of a tone. You can't fight hate with force. And a noble goal of standing up for a vague concept like hate or terror can quickly become an aggressive authoritarian suppression of thoughts, ideas, and people that you just don't like. So everyone should maybe take a step back, because it's the same way the system has always used labels and redefinitions to dehumanize people. Oh, those people are communists, so they're not actual people. We can just bar them from industries, ship them overseas, lock them in a cage. Oh, those people are terrorists, so they're okay to steamroll and drone strike and this, that, and the other. Oh, those guys are conspiracy theorists, so you can't take anything they say seriously. I mean, come on. A lot of people on the left say, oh, well, we just are fighting hate, but you're fighting it with hate. I would recommend that everybody cultivate their individuality and reject group labeling of yourself or other people, because that's when we're really susceptible to dehumanization. We're really susceptible to letting the system do whatever it wants with certain people once they've been properly labeled as something that we don't appreciate. But they're still people. It's a dirty, dirty trick, but we fall for it every time. I guess it's just how we're wired, apparently. But do what you do. I'm just a humble stoner dropout, and that's my advice for these tense and troubling times. But a lot of great stuff was brought to my attention in this show. Of course, there is an extra hour for Plus members, but the recent stuff, I think, is extra important, so I tacked it on to both versions in its entirety. So do sign up for Plus if you want to hear more of every episode. But in this episode in particular, we talked about the odd coincidence that many of the people credited with capturing footage in recent terror events actually have careers in media and government. That also came up in some of the recent events too. But also the extraordinary amount of shoeless victims in the media footage of those terror events, and how that motif is seen within the context of Freemasonic ritual and the symbolism behind it. And of course, we talk about other things too. I mean, Ole is just a wealth of knowledge, but thehighersidechatsplus.com if you're interested. And I should also say, I know that these sites have been going up and down a lot lately, all summer really. And what happened was I initially made the mistake of consolidating all three sites, the free, plus, and clothing sites, to one server. I thought it would be simpler and it was supposed to save me a lot of money, but it's been a nightmare because when any of the sites exceed their resources or have issues, Bluehost takes down all of Carlwood Industries. Before, being hosted at three different places, that could never happen. And the truth is, we've just grown so much in the past year that I'm getting pushed into bigger and bigger hosting packages, and I know there's got to be a better type of setup. And I'm not one to invoke victimhood, ever. I'm not the kind of guy who says, oh, they're coming to get me. But the truth is, like, the server has been attacked. I had to spend $1,000 on extra protection. If you looked at Google results for the higher side clothing, it says right there, this site may be hacked. A lot of my search results were coming back in Chinese characters. So there's some fuckery afoot. And we're still working through that. But I did spend all that money on extra protection. And anyway, just so you know, Plus members have no reason to worry. We use all third-party payment processors like PayPal and Stripe, so I couldn't even tell you your credit card number if I wanted to. It isn't stored anywhere on my servers or my sites. It's all third-party, and that's exactly what allows small businesses to handle something as complex and delicate as people's credit cards. You know when you go to like a hipster place and they swipe your card and then swing the iPad over for you to sign? They're using the exact same companies I use. But something or someone has wanted to take THC down, and the problems really started with that Scientology episode with Josh Reeves. But so many things can happen online that I can't say that it was a targeted attack, or maybe it was just some random bot or whatever. There's a lot of junk out there on the internet. So I am in talks with a couple of people on how to move forward. I have to get away from a big hosting company that just thinks of me as one of many clients and move to something more private with a tech guy who actually gives a shit. And I think we're close. I think I got a guy. But we're going to get these things handled. I'm sure of it. So I'm sorry the site seemed to be going down every other week. I'm trying to just get things right in the short term, and then I'll be able to focus on medium and long-term solutions. It's the bittersweet growing pains of business, I guess. It happens. But I gotta get back on the phone with Bluehost, so I'm gonna get out of here. Love you guys. Thanks for putting up with me. I hate looking so unprofessional and unstable this late in the game, especially being in the conspiracy genre, which for many, many years has had problems with quality. Something I've worked really hard to counteract with this show, but here we are. Once I get the right host, we'll be fine. So anyway, big thanks to Ole again. Really knocked it out of the park. And I'll see you guys next time. Your Move International Band of Crisis Actors, Servants of the Power Pyramid, and Facilitators of the Global Terror Tour. Your fucking move.
Oh no. You see, the world isn't random. It's attached to puppet strings. Control over everything. The 9 to 5 is trying to steal ya. Now don't that job seem silly? Hello, can you hear me? Or should I play back recordings from some spy agency? Wish we were younger and free. I'll be thankful when it's all exposed, the vast conspiracy. There's such a difference between us and the damn good and well. Did you ever
hear the argument that nothing really happens. It's no secret, and that the best is plus. It's doubling your time.